We are back to Zoom Into Your Lives with our DCT recaps. We are the Ladies with Gumption, and this is episode 27, Back to Basics. We recap DCTV in a flash. My name is Jessica, and I'm here with...
May.
And Tatiana.
And as always, you can hit us up with your feedback and how you thought about all of the shows this week on Twitter at DCTV Gumption. You can send us an email, ladieswgumption@gmail.com. Or you can hit us up and ask on Tumblr. Mine is Falling in Love in a Flash. You can talk to Tati at Valerie M. Perez, or you can talk to May at Her Own Hero Writer. You can also listen to us on iTunes, the Podomatic site, Google Play. Got a lot of choices. Choose one of them. Have fun. We have Facebook, but who really goes on Facebook anymore?
No, I think, was it you, Tati, who updated it last week?
I did.
Yay, I saw that. I was like, oh, I'm so happy who did that. It wasn't me.
I'm putting stuff on there, maybe. So getting into a little bit of feedback for this side of the intro, we had an email from Ivy, Miss Minute 42, on Twitter. And we're kind of splitting it into two parts because she had two different subjects in her email. One was about The Flash. We'll stick that in the second intro. But she also wanted to, first of all, thank Tati for co-authoring her first K-drama editorial.
Thank you.
And then her question regarding the Arrowverse is, at one point she was watching all of the shows, and then for whatever reason she dropped all of them except for The Flash and Black Lightning. So during the hiatus, she wants to see if she can get back into them. So for each of these shows, what do we consider to be the best part about the show and the thing that we consider the worst? And also, she wants to know our recommendation on Gotham, Tati. So,
I'm the only one who can recommend Gotham.
Well, I have thoughts, but I think May doesn't watch Gotham or hasn't really got into it.
I've DVR'd it all season, and I keep forgetting that it's there, so I have not watched a single episode. Shame on me.
Aww.
Does anyone want to start about, like, the CW DCTV shows first?
Supergirl, I think that my favorite part about Supergirl, or I think the best part, is just, like, the female friendships, probably. Like, I would say, like, obviously the sisterhood between Kara and Alex, but also this season especially, how Kara and Lena is developing, or how Lena and Sam, or even, dare I say, Alex and Sam. So all of these are my favorite part. How about you, ladies?
I would agree with that. I think that of all the DCTV shows on the CW, that Supergirl does have the strongest female friendships because the females actually speak to each other on a daily basis about things other than just one line.
Yep.
And like you said, you know, Kara and Alex's sisterly relationship is very strong. They have very powerful scenes together. You know, Kyler Lee makes me cry on a weekly basis, I feel. Mm-hmm. That part's really good. And also, like Tati already mentioned, the strong female friendships, specifically this season, and how they're also kind of allowing Lena to do more stuff as well, which is nice. And they have a great female villain for the most mm-hmm. part.
I'm going to run through all of mine really quickly. Supergirl, I skipped season one, and that turned out just fine. I think there's probably parts of season one that are enjoyable, but like with as far as what the best part of Supergirl is, I agree with May and Tati that it's like the female friendships, the fact that they can have scenes where it's just girls downloading on each other about their day and their fears and all that kind of stuff, and it still moves the plot along. It doesn't really feel like out of place, so I like that they are able to do that in a natural way and give the ladies space to talk to each other. Legends, just skip season one if you have not already, and you'll be fine. I think season two is where it picks up, and I think the best part about that is that it is just ridiculous. Like, they're all kind of messed up. They don't try to be the perfect kind of hero show. They're all screw-ups and they know it, but somehow their screw-ups still wind up, you know, being good in the end. So it's kind of like a feel-good, like, you don't really have to think that hard, fun kind of show. The only thing that is bad about it, or the worst part about it, I guess, is that because they are kind of so light and zany and it is kind of fun, the plot, like the big bad plots, kind of drag a little bit and it kind of meanders throughout the season. But like we said, like, last week, it's like donuts in the parking lot. You're not really going anywhere, but it's still fun. And then Arrow is complicated. I think all of the action from Arrow is really good as far as, like, the fighting scenes and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we talk about, we spend a lot of time about what is complicated about it and some of the more challenging aspects of it. So I think most people skip what seasons?
Four.
Of Arrow. Four?
Yeah.
I think so. Four is probably, yeah.
The four worst. Is the worst season.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is. And I feel with Arrow, I mean, I also enjoy the action aspects. I think it's still well choreographed for the most part. I think they always have that on point, you know. I feel like when at least the newbies were still talking to OTA, that, you know, it was nice to have new characters, so that was enjoyable to watch for a little while. It does frustrate me a lot, character-wise, so I'm not sure if you'd want to get into it again.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend getting into Arrow yet, unless you were really, you know...
Especially if you're like, a hardcore Laurel fan. If you're
really invested in some version of Laurel doing something, then sure, you have a reason to come back. But if you aren't invested in Oliver as a character, then you have no reason. Like, there's no point.
Yeah. And as for Supergirl's, the worst part about it, I think, is that of all the shows minus Legends, because Legends has always had bad, overall, like, the big bad is not as great, or as, like, the stakes aren't as high for them, right. I guess.
Yeah.
So Supergirl is, like, the one show that has struggled, really struggled, more so than the others, with their season-long big bad. Like, last season was just kind of all over the place, and it lost its footing in a lot of places, and it kind of became more about Mon-El, who is my other dislike on the show. So if you are not into asshole guys, and if you get annoyed of Ralph, he's worse.
Yeah, I was going to say, the worst things about Supergirl for me are white feminism and Mon-El. Yeah. Or not even just Mon-El, but, like, the way that romances for Kara are constructed and followed through with. Bad.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah. And then for Legends, best, I mean, y'all already said it. It's zany, it's super fun, it doesn't take itself too seriously, it lets the characters breathe, it's all great stuff. And then the worst thing is just, you don't really know where it's going, because it doesn't really care about going anywhere. But, like, we're about to get into what is probably, for me, the worst episode this season. But it's still not as frustrating as mediocre episodes from other shows, so.
And then I guess with Gotham, like, Gotham U is another complicated show. Like, you have to
skip season one. Skip it.
Yeah. I get to the point where I am okay with Gotham, and then something happens, and I'm just like, no. And then I have to, like, take a break for, like, months at a time. And then I, like, skip a couple episodes where it gets back into it. Because I think, is it season three with Mad Hatter storyline?
Yeah, season three is Mad Hatter.
Yeah, so skip all of that.
And then what?
All of Mad Hatter storyline was just gross.
Oh, and okay, then, you can skip the Mad Hatter episodes, but I liked season Mad three Hatter as a whole. Yeah.
Like, recently I haven't been keeping up with it because I saw something about, like, a pig man. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to like that, so...
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
Yeah,
so I see the thing that. With Gotham, as long as you just accept that it is not really a Batman story, you know, Jim Gordon is definitely not Jim Gordon. So just don't try to connect it back to the comics or the story that you know, and you'll probably be okay. The best parts of Gotham are the sirens, which would be, like... Selena and Tabitha and
Barbara.
Whatever version of Ivy you have at that time.
Yeah. When they're starting to get into Bruce's actual bat transition, Lisa, like, bat.
Yeah. Right now we're on a downturn with Bruce. Bruce is being shitty right now. But for the most part, Bruce is one of the best parts.
But I think we're on an upswing with the villains because I like with Joker and a whole bunch of Riddler and Penguin. It seems like in a really good spot with them right now. So it's kind of like a mix.
The villains are also one of the, like, highlights of Gotham. And then, of course, the low light is fucking Jim Gordon. He's just god-awful, and he doesn't make sense.
I feel like this show's not really about him. So the only thing I can say is that I just read, I edit somebody's reviews of Gotham every week. So I guess I sort of know what's going on. And I heard that, or I read that Bruce is no longer on his shit. So he's back to normal or whatever. But I never see like Jim.
Watch this week's episode.
Yes, I never see anything mentioned about Jim. So it's almost like he's not even.
he is the lead character, but everything else in the show is more interesting than him, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. Pretty much. He's the lead, but everything else that's going on around him is what matters. He just sort of shows up to be like, "Oh, that's what happened."
So, Ivy, if that helped you at all or not at all, I don't know. But moving along in other news for Titans, we recently learned that Jason Todd might be coming to the show. And recently, someone up in, I think they're filming in Toronto, where they're filming, saw a guy that they think might be Jason Todd, and his name is Caron Walters. So there's rumors that this is going to be our Jason Todd, and I don't know if you've seen him, but there's just, like, a lot of forehead going on.
Terrible.
It's too much forehead. Like, I could... M'Baku's challenge day speech could probably fit on his kid's forehead.
Oh my god.
Like,
wow.
Acting me. I don't know, like, what do you guys think about this possibly being Jason Todd?
I had no thoughts on his forehead, but I think he will probably look better undead.
Shouldn't he be, like, half, like, only half white, though? No, sorry, that's not Jason Todd, that's Damian.
That's Damian.
My bad. Clearly I'm confused. Yes, not Jason Todd, I take that back.
Get ahead of yourself.
I am.
Can't have a Wayne baby without a Wayne.
But yeah, I feel like his inclusion on the show could be interesting, because there's a lot they can do with it. But also interesting that I feel like there's so many characters, I can't keep track of anybody anymore.
It feels like they're swinging for the fences in the first season already. Like, we also have the episode titles. So, the first episode is going to be Titans, which is the pilot. Second episode is called Hawk and Dove. Episode 3 is called Starfire. 4 is called Rachel. Rachel being the plastic girl, Elastigirl. 5 is the Doom Patrol. 6 is the Messenger. And then 7 is Jason Todd. So, there's a lot of, like, it seems like beginner stories going on there. I hope that even though her episode is episode 3, that's not the first time that we see Starfire or any of the other. Well, sorry. I said Rachel was Elastigirl, but that's actually Raven. So I'm dumb. But anyway, yeah, like, I hope that's not, like, the first time that we see these people in their, like, title episode, so.
Because the first one's called Titans. So, like, what Titans would you have if you didn't have them? You would just have Dick and Beast Boy? Like...
Right, I feel like it should be an episode of them all coming together, or they're already friends.
Yeah, and then the others might just be, like, centric episodes, right? Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
One would hope, but yeah.
On The Flash, we got a lot of press information off of the ahead of the Run Iris Run episode with Todd and Candace, and we learned a couple of really cool things that's coming up for Iris in the next few episodes. She and Marlize will be facing off in hand-to-hand combat, and Iris's journalism will definitely be used to help them figure out how to defeat in episode 21.
Yay!
Team Flash could also be recruiting old foes to help out, so it's going to be, like, you know, open call, anybody, everybody come and defeat DeVoe. Cecile's mind reading will come back into play and tie back into the big bad plan of defeating DeVoe. And then they also talked about who Jessica Parker Kennedy is playing, and she's definitely excuse me. She's definitely not knocked on. So, there's still a chance.
Yes, and I think the biggest clue we got was when Candace was on the ET interview with Leanne, and she was saying that she looked very familiar, and then we know that her suit is going to come back into play.
Right. The fact that Iris' suit is coming back into play, and there'll be a reason why it's purple, suggests that Jessica Parker Kennedy is their progeny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I very specifically said that purple was chosen for a reason. And I thought it was funny that Iris was saying, Candace was saying, like, she looks very familiar, like, I wonder who she is. And then, like, Leon was like, who is she? She's like, I have no idea. I'm like, Candace, stop playing.
Right?
We know you so know.
And then finally, for this side of the intro, Saturn Awards nominations were released yesterday, the day before yesterday. And all the DC TV shows for the CW were nominated in the superhero genre, as well as Gotham on Fox. So you've got heavy DC TV presence in the nominations this year.
Yeah.
Melissa Benoist was nominated for leading actress for Supergirl. Odette Annabelle was nominated for supporting actress on Supergirl. And Candace was nominated for supporting actress on The Flash.
Woohoo!
And then Hartley Sawyer was nominated for recurring guest star for The Flash. we like Hartley.
Yeah. I know.
We do like Hartley. Hartley's a nice boy.
David Mazouz for Gotham was nominated for Best Performance by Younger Actor, so hooray for him.
Yay! And
then Grant was not nominated in the Leading Actor category.
Boo.
Yes, I was. I want to go on Twitter, but I didn't have time to rage. But I did feel a little bit defensive because I feel like this is the first year he wasn't nominated, and it's a little bit frustrating because they do take into account 3B. So he was Savitar and Barry, and he played musical Barry. Well, he wasn't a different character, but he got to like do other stuff.
Yeah.
And then you had really strong performances from him where he was Beautiful Mind in 4-1 and then, you know, 4-7 when he was going after DeVoe and then 4-9 when he was coming
face to face. And the crossover.
And the crossover.
For the wedding alone, he should get one.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so I think that he was, you know, sidelined here. And it's sad because he is the strongest of the leads on the DC TV shows, I think.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh, well. So this week, we have three shows to talk about. We're going to split up Legends and Black Lightning on side A and then talk about The Flash on side B. We'll talk about our likes, dislikes, season predictions, and then we're going to nominate and crown Iris as Lady of Gotham of the Week. So we're going to get it started. I'm going to toss it over to Tatiana, who's going to take us through Legends and Black Lightning, Devil's Music / God's Work.
I love the poetry of that. So, on Legends of Tomorrow this week, Elvis Presley walked into a guitar shop in Memphis in the 1950s and purchased a cursed guitar that eventually drives Memphis crazy when he plays it. So that's what the Legends are dealing with this week, the anachronism that kills rock and roll in its infancy, because obviously Elvis invented it, and without him there would only be Josh Groban. So, the group has to go to the local church in Memphis, where Elvis's uncle preaches, to hear Elvis play, and his sweet gospel music sends Zari's totem floating, which means his guitar is somehow also a totem. Joy of Joys, it turns out to be the death totem, and they need to steal it back before it makes Memphis a ghost town. Thank goodness for Wally and his speed, who are right there to grab it in 2 seconds flat, but no one appreciates Wally's work because that still leaves music without its white savior, Elvis. And since Nate and Amaya are on the hunt for their next anachronistic date night, and everyone knows that Nate is wildly passionate about whatever this week's theme is, he volunteers to set history on the right path. So, together, Nate and Amaya pretend to be music agents who want to sign Elvis. But he can't play good without his magical guitar, because it's haunted by the ghost of his stillborn twin brother. A fact the Waybrider residents also realize when it starts beating them up. Nevertheless, Nate insists on letting Elvis record one song with it at Sun Studios so that rock and roll can flourish. Unfortunately, the Reverend Uncle shows up, takes the record, and sends them directly to jail without passing go or collecting $200. This is when Wally and Zari must save the day, not by using speed, but by using his mouth to spread lies about Joe West in an attempt to connect with the racist preacher who thinks the devil spends time playing music. And it works. So now, Elvis's music is playing on the radio, Zari and Wally can dance, all's well that ends well, until the ghosts come knocking on the church door, trying to come in, just as mixed dead rat Axel rises from the dead during the funeral that Ray forced everyone to hold for him. Elvis and Steel Dixon then break out of jail so that Elvis can calm the ghost with the power of song, because the dead just want to be acknowledged. So he plays Amazing Grace and everyone swoons before the dead disappear back into nothingness. And now Elvis can play without the spirit of his twin, because the music was inside him all along, just like the memory of his dead brother. And even better, the Legends now have 3 of the 6 totems, so there is no way that anything will go wrong next week and possess Sarah. And that's what you missed on Legends Tomorrow. So, what did you ladies think? Or, I always ask what you think, but I have to ask what you liked. So what did you ladies like about this week's Legends?
I liked seeing Wally and Zari bond. I feel like Wally is really on this happy-go-lucky vibe right now, and Zari never is. So it's always interesting to see her end up getting along the most with personalities that are the complete opposite of her, like her and Ray. I like that he seemed undeterred by her attitude, and then him asking her to dance was really sweet and cute. I also liked Wally bringing up Joe, even if some of what he said will end up in my dislikes. I like that we finally did find out what the mystery totem was, and that we didn't have to wait that long for it to be revealed, but the rest is not my likes, so carry on.
Well, I was like 2 sentences.
Yeah, I was like, I really dislike this episode, guys.
I have to say, like, Memphis is my hometown, so I'm from Memphis. And Memphis never gets featured on TV for anything in any kind of, like, fictional setting, so it's always kind of cool to see your hometown featured in an episode. So, I like that. And I like that through Nate, that the audience kind of learned some things about music history and the city's importance to rock and roll. There are some things that he said that I didn't like, but I'm going to talk about that later. But if you ever do visit Memphis, like, in addition to going to Graceland, because everyone wants to go to Graceland, and I didn't go to Graceland until, like, after I graduated college, so I spent my whole life in Memphis and avoided Elvis Presley's house for 20 years. But there's also Sun Studios and the Rock and Soul Museum, and you can park your car at one location, and there's a bus that'll take you between, like, all 3, so you can just make, like, a music history day out of it, and it's really cool. And then Beale Street, of course. I wish they had spent some money to get some exterior shots, like even like generic shots of Memphis and Beale Street, because that would have just added to, but that's going to go in dislike, so I'm going to move on from that. But anyway, it's really, you know.
See, everything's in the dislike section. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's totally fine. We're all good. Like, the house is on fire, but it's fine. Let's see. What else did I like that was not that it was in Memphis? I like that we found out that the totem was a death totem, like May said. You know, I'm glad that we didn't have to, like, you know, worry about when it's going to be revealed and why and all that kind of stuff. And Ray, he continues to be, like, the sweetest, like, emotionally healthiest person in the universe. And I love that he gave Axel a rat funeral because he knew Mick needed it, not because he wanted to do it, but because he knew that it was something that somebody else needed. So I really appreciate him for that. Like, he's, like, a really good, you know, person to have on your side or be your friend. Even if you hate him, he will still help you. So, like,
aww.
Ray is just, like, the best. So those are my likes. Memphis and Ray.
Ray is a ray of sunshine. I agree about Ray. He's wonderful. I did enjoy Wally having so much fun with his speed at first, you know, getting to just, like, clean the whole place and, like, move himself in, grab the totem. He was just definitely enjoying himself. And I liked Zari specifically hating Joy in a totally in-character way. So their dynamic is always really fun to me. Like you already said, it's sort of like Zari playing off against Ray, but perhaps even more extreme because Wally is just, like, really up there right now. And I also like that she taught him about how to use a scalpel on history instead of a jackhammer or whatever she said. I can't remember what she said. And then at the end, she did, like, was like, all right, use your speed to rush it over there because we don't, you know, we don't have time. So that was cute. Wally's speech to Elvis's uncle was very well acted by Keenan. And I like that Wally brought Joe into it, even though the words didn't make sense. I also love their dancing scene together. Their dancing scene almost saved the episode. They were very cute. I really like that dynamic. Nate's love of rock and roll, it was It was very, very sweet how he, like, wanted Amaya to join him in this love. Even though, again, it's sort of, it's a little bit hokey, but it's cute that she's like, I don't get why you need us to love this together. And he's like, no, because it's just so romantic if we love it together. And I'm like, all right, you're cute, Nate, I guess. And her, I love you to him at the end. I like that little moment where she's, I have several dislikes about that moment, but I like that she said, I love you when he couldn't hear her. That was cute. Okay. Finally, what Jessica just said, Ray having that funeral for Axel was so Ray. I just can't. Everything about that. And then him even getting Sarah to say some words by threatening to start singing Sweet Child of Mine. Perfect. And finally, I did like when Elvis was singing Amazing Grace and everyone was, you know, feeling calmed and, like, cocoing back to the afterlife. So yes. Those are my likes. So what did we not like, other than the rest of the episode?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like they don't have a handle on Wally's character. Not yet, anyway. It's like the writing for him from when he first joined the Flash back in season 2. I was so happy he mentioned Joe and then turned it into, well, we couldn't find a way to fit into each other's lives. And I'm like, what? When did this happen? Was I watching him on some alternate show where Wally didn't fit in for 3 whole seasons? Like, I don't understand why they're writing him this way at all. And it's almost like he needs the Legends team to make him feel like he belongs. And I dislike that. Plus, him trying to relate to a hateful preacher is not the same thing as what he and Joe ever went through. So that's a completely different story. Joe actually loves Wally. So that whole
speech... Well, the preacher actually loves Elvis, but...
Yeah. You
know, I get it.
Yeah, but you get me. So, like, that part, that kind of comparison made no sense to me. But anyway, I also thought it was odd that despite Nate mentioning Black influence on rock and roll and Black-owned places, that still didn't really factor into the story at all. It's like 1954, and Wally and Amaya are walking around town like it's nothing, with absolutely no dirty looks or comments or worse. Not realistic. Zari, Wally, and Amaya at a church full of white people who are ready to attack at any given point, but they were unbothered by the people of color in the room. Also not realistic. And I know this show barely ever touches upon these kinds of issues, but then, like, don't make a whole episode centered on Elvis in 1954 Memphis to begin with, you know? So, like, the whole purpose of the episode was to reveal the death totem, but it all felt like it was just an episode that the writers wanted to do so that they could include Elvis just because. Like, his story was incredibly lacking, and I found it hard to believe he couldn't play without his supernatural guitar. And the actor who played him was fine, but he wasn't Elvis to me. Just a guy who had his name. So I didn't really feel all that invested in what was going on. And the episode's decision to focus on him took away from the main characters, and I didn't really appreciate that. And then Mick's whole subplot with the rat felt way too ridiculous, even for the show. And that Sarah and Ray had to be included felt like a complete waste of their time. They could have been doing something else. And I'm still feeling incredibly meh about Steel Vixen. I think I'm supposed to root for them, but I got annoyed of Nate trying to make a moment for him and Amaya. But I think part of it was because I was annoyed with the episode overall, but I still think all of their moments fell a little flat this episode. And I think it would have been more meaningful to have had Wally or even Sarah try to get the totem themselves, since they've both lost people. So I think it would have made more of an impact had they tied in the death totem with either, you know, Wally or Sarah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that when Wally took a hold of the guitar, you know, Francine didn't pop up, or Sarah with Laurel or something like that, because it did feel like a missed opportunity there. But, like, okay, first of all, I have to go back, because, like I said, I'm from Memphis, and as much as I liked that it was featured, it was also just, like, you know, on a show that does the most unrealistic things, like, there's some pretty unrealistic, like, Memphis, 1954, and, like, what May was saying, like, you know, 2-3 minorities in an all-white church, and no one has anything to say about it, and it's okay, y'all, like, 1950s Memphis was racist as hell, like, do not be naive, like, television is television, but let's be for real, you know? Nate and Amaya having a romance
and trying to frame like this episode as their romance in a segregated city in 1950s was just a little bit, and then not even have any kind of like discussion around it or have the city react to them in any kind of way was just kind of, that wasn't the best move. If this was supposed to be an episode about their journey and their romance, don't put it in racist southern city in the 1950s. There's just no way that they could have like spent like a whole day together around each other and no one said it all. Especially, okay, not even just like them interracial dating aside, church and religion in the South is serious business. You like him asking her to dance in a church, in a white church, in a white southern church in the 1950s, and then kissing and all of that kind of stuff is not, is that's just like TV magic. And then like aside from them, the preacher turning on Elvis's song on the radio, and then them having like a like makeshift sock hop in the church with all of like them twisting and you know being rock and roll, like that just does not happen. Like it's not realistic. It's not realistic at all. Yeah, like most of the characterization of Memphis by was just an anachronism in itself, because that's just, it wasn't just, it was not realistic at all. And then for the music side of it, while I did like that Nate tied the city to the birthplace of rock and roll, Elvis did not invent rock and roll music. Like Elvis not singing one song does not derail the entire rock and roll genre. So, and I don't like that that was how it was framed. Like black musicians created rock and roll. Elvis cribbed off black musicians and got popular. He can sing, does well, but he did not invent the genre. Black musicians did. And then he stole off, he was quote unquote heavily influenced by black musicians. And that brought it to the mainstream and all of that. So, I mean, like, you know, Elvis, you know, he's a talented musician. He has like a place in history, but he's like, I feel like the anachronism was a little bit of a stretch, because just him not doing what he did doesn't mean that rock and roll ceased to exist. If anything, like the anachronism would be Elvis's totem driving all of the real, well, not real musicians, but all of like the real rock and roll founders out of Memphis, and they spread out and then they never collaborate and they never do anything. And then that's how rock and roll music doesn't get started. But it's not specifically because Elvis doesn't sing one song. And I don't like that they framed it as if he invented the genre. Speaking of Elvis, of all the celebrities in the world, I feel like Elvis is the one with the most impersonators. So I'm a little bit confused on how they Legends chose actor that they chose. I mean, he's a nice, good-looking guy, but he's not, he doesn't look like Elvis at all. Elvis is actually blue, for one. That's a nitpick, but his eyes are blue. And then he doesn't sound like Elvis at all. So his normal speaking voice with his singing voice was like two completely different voices. And even his singing voice, it sounded more Elvis-like, but even that was kind of like Elvis-lite. Like it wasn't really very Elvis at all. So it was very weird trying to look at this guy and try to connect him to Elvis when he just was not the best Elvis impersonator. I agree with May that the Legends writers don't really seem to have a feel for Wally yet. It's almost like they have to intentionally bring him down a little bit. Like, they have to regress him from the Flash a little bit in order to build him up in this kind of weird screw-ups that are trying to put together space that the Legends show has for everybody else. So he, like, stuff kind of gets twisted. For example, him not feeling like he's smart enough, or the whole situation with Joe, even though, like, we're looking at it like, I don't think that's right, you know? And Steel Vixen, I was still salty about Nate and the whole basic bitch comment from last episode. So I was less than pleased that they were so lovey-dovey in this episode and that Amaya was just, like, totally fine with Nate. And it's just like, none of this, like, love story really makes me feel anything after, like, he called her a basic bitch indirectly last episode. Like, I don't feel it, so.
Well, all right, then. My biggest issue is, like, the same. Though it's the same. But, no, I mean, I totally agree about about Nate, he gives like a cursory explanation like, oh, the black owned businesses and oh, this is the birthplace of rock and roll and all these, you know, black musicians that you're not going to see anywhere because we're only going to talk about Elvis and how he's...
They, like, one of the actors, I swear to God, like, they had him play B.B. King, but they never mention his name. They never do anything like that. So it's just, like, a black musician in a bar when, like, B.B. King was also, like, a really big part of the genre. And you just, like, don't mention it at all. So yeah.
So for me, it's a little weird because... Like you said, Elvis borrowed, quote unquote, borrowed from black musicians and got famous off their backs. And this is the show that knows well enough to make P.T. Barnum a villain, but it's not going to try to go into any nuance here because, I don't know, it's Elvis. So whatever. And there were plenty of opportunities for them to highlight the racism of the time period, either in that bar scene or at the church when Zari was possessed. Like, she looks like she's possessed and she's you know, like, you think you would have said something about that. And then when the uncle called, like, Nate Namias, like, that you're gonna turn to, like, hoochie, something about hoochies, that hoochie. And so you could have, like, turned that into something, but they did not take these opportunities. I also was really, I just found it really uncomfortable that Elvis's guitar was haunted by the spirit of a stillborn friend brother. I don't know why. It's just a personal thing, I guess. But I'm just like, I feel like you're just taking something that's miscarriage or, like, stillbirth is, like, a really, like, serious thing for people. And then you're making, like zany adventure. Like, oh, now he's got adventures with his brother's guitar and some shit. Whatever. I guess it just goes into a whole, like, spiritual, like, you know, how much is his brother grow with him? Like, in the spirit world? Like, he died.
Right.
So I don't know. It just made me, like, I spent way too much time during the episode thinking about, like, spiritual ethics and not focused on the story. Also, okay, speaking of that, like, confusing story elements, why is it that Elvis, of all people, has the death totem? It's, like, from the lost tribe of Zambezi, but then it wound up in Memphis. But, like, and we don't get any, like, it just feels totally disconnected from the other totems. It's just like, oh, here's an extra totem. And even though we didn't know what the sixth totem was, now that we've located the sixth totem, we have a little Wikipedia entry on what the sixth totem is. There was no, like, excitement to that discovery, or no, like, sense of mysticism or anything. I was just kind of like, oh, okay, here it is.
There's no, like, connection with Elvis and the death totem because, like you said, like, his brother died before, you know, he even had memory. So,
yeah. So it's just like, okay. And yes, you already said, he doesn't look like Elvis, he doesn't act like Elvis, doesn't sound like Elvis, nothing. And I would have cared more about this if I wasn't already so disengaged from the plot, which I was, so I barely even noticed that. Now, this was the first episode all season that I just flat out didn't like. So, you go, Legends, because you're doing better than everyone else. I also didn't like that everyone seemed annoyed by Wally using his speed. Like, Zari, like I said, makes sense because her personality is to be a killjoy until she warms up to you. But, like, Nate and Sarah being annoyed by it, like, it's more useful. What is your problem? It doesn't make sense.
Right, and no, they worked with Barry. Like, why would this be annoying to you?
Yeah, because, like, no one's going to say thank you to him for cleaning. Or, like, oh, it's so nice that you didn't make me waste my time setting up your room because you already did it yourself. Nope, nobody cared. Anyway, so just let my son live. Let him enjoy his speed. Oh, my God. Also, like we said, his speech about Joe, it was weird. Like, I liked that he was, like, trying. I guess he's trying to say that, like, I know that you love your nephew no matter what differences you have. Just like I know my dad loves me no matter what differences we have. And in the end, he let me go do my thing, and you should let him do this thing. But, like, that's not what he said. I think that's what he meant. It's not what he said. And it did not track with the story of the Flash at all. So I was like, okay, I don't understand. Anyway. Also, how did that convince the uncle to be like, oh, wow, yes, this random stranger showed up and told me that his dad let him go on a journey of self-discovery. Now I will play my nephew's record.
Music in my church and let people twist their hips and dance a female together.
Yeah, like, what? It just made no sense. It made no sense. That was like, that's like taking the hallway pep talk to the extreme. Like, this was quite the leap of faith. Anyway, back to Axel the Rat. I did not remember him at all from before. There was a little montage at the end, so I guess he showed up, but it was ridiculous. And I thought that would have been an excellent opportunity to connect how the change isn't really, like, Mick's not really upset that Wally moved in, or he's not really upset that he can't eat his fucking Elvis sandwich, and he's not really upset that his rat is dead. You know, but he's really upset because of the actual changes, like the death of Stein and the loss of Jax, and before that, you know, losing Snart, and now just again, losing him again, without even giving him a goodbye. But no, it was not about that. It was just because he lost his rat after his rat's name was changed to Josh Groban. So,
that's Josh Groban hatred. I don't understand.
I like Josh Groban.
I do too.
They hated Josh Groban. I don't know why. What did Josh Groban do to you? But anyway, like I had said to you guys before, I did think that the Steel Vixen was cute, but I have several issues with it because, first off, I think we've already mentioned this before, but Amaya is not someone who likes to skip out on missions and, like, you know, I don't know, hook up with Nate randomly on the side instead of actually doing their job. Like, right. And that's, like, what she's been up to these last couple episodes. And I'm like, okay, I don't understand why, but I guess.
She's trying to get Azaria. It in before she has to go marry her true love.
Right? She's trying to sow her wild oats. Anyway, I also really didn't. It bothered me that they didn't try to play Zambezi music. Like, obviously, Zambezi music does not exist, but they just had, like, that generic background track that was playing before she found the song, and then it just continued to play, so, like, you have no idea what Nate's listening to. And I'm like, there has to be music that you could have found that would be similar to what you're expecting Nate to be listening to right now.
Yeah.
But no, they did not. It was not important, even though we had to listen to Elvis songs all episode. We could not find a quote-unquote Zambezi song.
Yeah. Anyway. I feel like that's the same as, like, you could have spent a little bit of money on some generic, like, exterior shots of the city instead of in the church or in a bar, and we don't go outside at all.
Yep. So, yeah, those were my dislikes. So, do you guys have predictions for us?
I have a wild prediction that's pretty far-fetched, probably won't happen, but I think Nate could die, but let me tell you why. I think that Amaya telling him she loves him, but him not hearing her was an odd choice, because for any TV couple, saying I love you for the first time is usually a big deal, specifically if this is, like, your more primary couple, and it wasn't here, so they didn't have Nate react to it. He didn't hear her. Like, it was so bizarre. And then when he did ask her what she said, she's like, oh, nothing. So, like, what was the point? So the first thing I thought afterwards, like, my God, he's a goner.
You know, I don't think that's that far-fetched, though. Because, like, obviously, Kuasa and Mari never knew their grandfather. And so it seems like that he wasn't around. So it's possible that he does die, and then she goes back to 1942 because she's heartbroken, and then she finds out that she's pregnant, you know?
Surprise!
Mm. And then that's, like, the thing or whatever. So
yeah, that's
that far off, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I had not thought of that, but once you mentioned it, like I said, it seemed odd to me that she's been, like, avoiding her destiny, like, so hard, or avoiding making a choice about her destiny when she used to be so, like, that was what she was so focused on. So maybe now that she's trying to avoid it, that's how it ends up happening. It's like, she's off, like, you know, not paying attention to missions with Nate, and then maybe one of those gets him killed. When she could have been following whatever plot she's supposed to be having with Kuasa right now, and hasn't had since she said she would have one. And then either, like, Jessica just said, oh, he died, but then she's pregnant, so it's fine because everything's going as it should. Or, like, that's when Kuasa is like, I'm disappearing now, suddenly. Because Nate died too soon, oops. And then she has to fix it. Either way, I'm still on the he's the baby daddy train. That's the moral of the story. So, yeah, you got any other predictions, Jess?
I do not.
It's all right. You still pulled one out of the hat. So you pulled that rabbit out. Yeah, it was good. It was good. And I did the same thing. We're just all piggybacking off of May.
We're Elvis.
We are the handle this? I love it. All right. So I guess I will recap Black Lightning. Are y'all ready?
Yes. We are.
Okay. So, Black Lightning. While Jefferson trains Anissa inside the Black Cave on how to relax and discard danger that isn't there, but also stay woke because if you blink, you die, the corrupt cops and government agencies outside the cave are poisoning the people against their hero. Not only do civilians now think that Black Lightning murdered that nice Lady Eve, but Gamby's ASA superior is now telling him in no uncertain terms that he is about to kill him. In order to clear Black Lightning's name before things go haywire, Jefferson and Anissa break into the morgue to check out Lady Eve's body. There they discover that her burns could only have been caused by a nuclear weapon. So now they need to either find it or find another body to compare hers to. Which means that Anissa's next training session is a stakeout in the woods, where they find both those things and wait for Henderson to come pick up the evidence after Jefferson calls him on an old-ass cell phone. But someone else drops by first instead, and despite Anissa's usually reckless ways, this time she winds up saving her father's life and rocking his world in the process. Meanwhile, Lynn has discovered that not only were the Alvin Pierce papers Anissa gave her missing, but that the lab she took her samples to got broken into as well. So someone really did not want her to buy that information, but she's smart enough to have the assistant at the lab check the to-be-filed pile and learns that those samples were vaccines from 30 years ago that contained the same basic elements as green light. And you know who else showed up in Freeland 30 years ago? Gamby. So she goes to question Gamby. He trips up, clearly not wanting to tell the truth to anyone but Jefferson. And Lynn is forced to bring Jefferson down from his exciting Anissa high and send him Gamby's way, where he finds out that the dude's name is really Peter Esposito, and he was sent as an ASA agent 30 years ago to root out the metahumans accidentally created by the vaccine meant to keep black people docile, which is super fucked up. Gamby freaked out when he realized that children were in danger, so he leaked the info to Alvin, who got himself killed in the investigation. And that is why Gamby has felt guilty and protected Jefferson ever since. Unsurprisingly, Jefferson tells him to go to hell and to stay away from the Pierce family. Thank you very much. On the other side of town, Lala's alive again and seeks out his old crew to keep doing whatever the fuck that is that he's doing. But he's literally being haunted by LaWanda everywhere from the back of the car to the shower. And we still have no idea why. Finally, Jennifer and Keisha are putting up posters for student government after school when Jennifer's powers activate for the first frightening time, and she electrocutes her own phone while trying to stop Keisha from falling off a ladder. So naturally, the first thing she does is go directly to her sister and tell her everything, like a normal person would. And that's what you missed on Black Lightning. So, ladies, why don't you tell me what you liked about the episode?
Well, I liked that Jennifer finally, like, for the first time, it seems like in a long time, actually got some decent screen time in this episode. And finally, she has her powers. So that was great. Really, it's been such a long time coming that I was starting to fear that it would never come. So I'm glad that we finally got her to that point. And I also liked that her powers activating had absolutely nothing to do with Khalil. Like, her whole storyline is up to this point just been about Khalil. And so I was like, oh God, like, she's going to find out that he's working with Tobias and trashing Black Lightning, and that's going to somehow cause her powers to activate or whatever. But I like more that it was, she felt like her friend was in danger, and that's why they activated. So I like that version a lot better. I like that's how her powers chose to come out. And this is minor, but when she and Keisha were hanging out posters, I really liked that she just, like, casually mentioned that she was applying to Harvard, because I think she gets slept on all the time by her family, by the audience, by everybody, that she's kind of carefree, millennial, doesn't think too much about life, but you can tell that she really does care about her education and her future, which makes me really happy. I liked that Jefferson was committed to teaching Anissa how to use her powers. I liked the kung fu fighting sequence in the beginning. I thought that was really fun. And even though his preaching, like, low-key was annoying throughout the episode, I think it was something that Anissa definitely needed, because she's really, like, high-key bull in a china shop the way that she uses her powers. And so I agree with Jefferson that she could use a little bit more finesse, especially like with when they were in the morgue and he's trying to like, how much power do you need to get into this wall, like push apart the wall? Do you need like a finger tap or do you need like a hand tap? Or, you know, and then she just like throws out the whole wall. I'm like, throw the whole wall away. So I'm glad that he is like teaching her to kind of think more how to use, like what Zari was saying to Wally, how to use her powers like a scalpel and not like a jackhammer. And then finally, I like that Gamby finally had to come clean and admit to Jefferson that he was responsible for Alvin's death. So I like that we kind of got that out of the way. There's a lot of stuff about that I didn't like, but I do like that it's out in the open now. And I still can't let go of the suspicion that he's, like, leaving out certain details. But at least the main part is out there, and we don't have to keep going back and forth with this, you know, I trust you, I don't trust you kind of mess. So that was cool.
Yeah, I agree with many things. I love the training scenes between Jefferson and Anissa too. I really like that they found a good place or a good pace, and Jefferson was enjoying teaching while Anissa enjoyed learning, but also that they kind of got to teach each other a few things that were the opposite of what they already know. And I loved how giddy Jefferson was after Anissa saved his life and the realization that he shouldn't also try and take away her raw instincts as well. And I love that Anissa got so much attention and that she was ready to, you know, learn all she could because she wanted to truly help. And I love that Lynn got to really investigate and find out that there's something shady with Gamby, even though she only had so much to go on. because she already didn't like him. I don't know. So she just guessed that he was just had something
right?
to do
that
with
was
it.
Like, it was you. Damn it. Being very May about it.
I also really like the car scene in which Lala and Luanda were talking to each other, but the two guys in the front think he's talking to himself. I think it I think it played up on the something's not right factor in a way that was both suspicious, intense, and also kind of funny. I also really like the scenes of Jennifer and Keisha in high school because it just reminds us that she still is in high school and there still is a world outside of what's currently going on with Jefferson and Anissa, because we haven't really seen Jefferson be principal in a couple of episodes. I also really like the way in which Jennifer got her powers and how it was quick but also very obvious. And I continue to love how trusting and forthcoming she is when it comes to telling the truth to her family. Finally, I also like that the Gamby reveal scene to Jefferson. Like, it gave us enough information while also adding more questions, but at least Gamby isn't as shady as I thought, since I believed he was like the highest of higher ups and that he created Green Light and did everything on purpose. So, you know, it was a little bit of a relief, but still, you know, bad, but it was a good scene.
Yeah, I also had a lot of fun with Jefferson training Anissa. I thought it was really great to see, you know, he had some really good points, but he was also being like a really annoying dad about it. And she was over eager, but at the same time, it's great to see how eager she is to learn and how much she does want to help. And that he sees that, and eventually, like you said, he realized that he can't try to like squash those instincts or can't really change her because he doesn't want to change the part of her that wants to be a hero and that is so good at it. So yeah, everything about that storyline was great. I love the bit in the woods, especially with her making fun of his cell phone and then also laughing at the message he's leaving for Henderson, like the voice he's using and the way he's trying to be all dramatic. Of course, her saving the day was great, and him being so proud of her was adorable. I was squeeing about it. It was really cute. But at the same time, I liked how he noticed Lynn had her sad face. What do you call it? Your sad eyes. Right? He's like, oh, your sad eyes. And that he could tell something was wrong, and that she was more worried about Jefferson, how Jefferson would take the Gamby news, than about Gamby himself, which I thought was really sweet. I also, like you said, I liked LaWanda and Lala in the car, especially because it's like you can almost forget that LaWanda's not really there, so you see them just having like a conversation, and then you see the guys, like his crew, like driving him, and they're like looking back, and he's talking to himself about killing them. They're like, please don't do that. So that was fun. I liked how smart Lynn got to be, like, you know, trying to figure out what happened to her samples and coming up with another way to get the information, even though the samples had been stolen. So that was very cool. And yeah, I love Jennifer and Keisha in the high school. I think the friendship's really sweet. And I was also, like, right there with Jennifer, like, what is she doing? Why is she climbing that ladder? She's going to... I was so scared. She was going to fall. She's going to break her neck. I really did think that she was going to fall and Jennifer's going to save her, but that's okay. You can't go all the way. So it was so cool to see how the electricity, like, you know, sparked her phone and the poster too, which I hadn't noticed the first time. There was like that big, you know, burn mark on the poster, which was cool. So yeah, what did we not like as much as what we liked?
Well, I think like this is one of my least favorite episodes overall. But I think just coming off of the last two episodes are really good.
Yeah.
Really focused, ramping up. And this one just seems structurally kind of all over the place. And so kind of lacked that tension and excitement of the previous two. So, like, even Jennifer's power storyline felt like it didn't get the attention from the narrative that it deserved. Because the whole episode, her family was, like, too invested in what they were doing to kind of check in on her. So, like, I was kind of a little bit miffed that Anissa's first thought when Jen came to her about her powers was that, are you pregnant kind of thing. It's like not three or four episodes ago, Jennifer was talking about still being a virgin and planning her first time, which never happened because Khalil got paralyzed. Like, since then, when was she supposed to have been out there having, like, unprotected sex all over the place, you know? And it's kind of like, how far removed is she from the family, or how, like, they haven't really been checking in with her enough for that to be, like, the first thing that you think of.
It only takes one time, Jessica.
Why would you supposed to do that once? Like, why would she, like, knowing the kind of person that Jennifer is, like, Jennifer would have told her sister about that first time, or whatever. Sure. Like, how disconnected are you guys from what's going on inside the family, that's kind of, like, the first thought that you come up with, but, you know, whatever. It's like, yeah, anyway, I'm kind of a little bit disappointed that Lynn lied to Jen as well. Like, I thought she was my last black hope that someone, like, bringing Jennifer into the fold before it was, you know, she found out on her own. And while I don't think that we spent enough time on Jennifer and her powers, I think we spent way too much time on Mr. Esposito, with his hands about, like, his guilty feelings. Because that was just, like, over half of the episode. And what was the point of the church scene with, like, fake-ass Angela Lansbury talking to him about, like, you know, guilt and you will be forgiven and all this kind of stuff? We already know Gamby feels guilty. Like, we've been known for the last couple of episodes that he feels guilty. I didn't need this random church scene. If this lady is not, like, some kind of undercover evil spy or whatever, I don't know what the point of seeing her was on the episode. Like, she got a check for, like, 2 minutes worth of work. I'm like, good for you, lady, but I didn't really know the episode. And it's just kind of the whole thing, like, three of the five different storylines in this episode had to tie back to Gamby telling Jefferson the truth. And, like, Lynn's whole plot was to expose the truth from Gamby, and then we had to wait another whole scene for Gamby to actually talk to Jefferson. And so for me, it was kind of, it would have been more impactful and dramatic if Lynn had seen something in the shop. Like, we saw her looking at something, waiting on Gamby, and I thought, like, she was going to see something and put two and two together and then, like, race out, but that didn't happen. But it would have been better if she had found something, connected the dots, and left before Gamby arrived, told Jefferson that Gamby, you know, was behind green light, and then Jefferson confronts Gamby for the truth. But the way that it actually played out, I feel like it was mostly to protect Gamby's image in the fandom of being a good guy more than an actual story. So I didn't really like the way that played out. And then, like, I do, that should have been in my life, the whole car scene with LaWanda. he was really kind of insane. He's like, LaWanda, you crazy. Like, the way his delivery and the way he was saying that, like, it was just odd. But, like, what I didn't like was the other scene with them in the shower. Like, I don't know what was going on there. We didn't really get any answers on why or how he's returning. And then, worse, he doesn't even know why. He doesn't even know why. Right. And, like, that is telling me that racist-ass Proctor guy, Martin Proctor, had something to do with it, or he could be behind it. So it would have been nice to see something, like, connecting Martin back more into the plot, which they also didn't do. And not just Lala, like, wandering around Freeland aimlessly talking to himself. And it would make sense for her to be haunting him as a punishment, but then they turned it into something sexual, and I just don't. It's extra gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree about that, but I put that in my last part of my notes. I also agree that the episode lacked an overall theme, and also about it kind of being unable to properly tie in the separate subplots. What I didn't like about the Lynn Gamby scene is that they don't exactly like each other, right?
Right.
And then she pieces together that he might have something to do with Green Light, but she doesn't question him about it or back away suspiciously. Like, did she not want more answers herself? I get that the big reveal was meant for Jefferson. I just thought it was odd that she wouldn't want to know more, given that his past affects her whole family now, not just Jefferson. So
yeah.
I also thought the church scene was bizarre. It ultimately had no purpose and probably could have been used, but in a later episode, like after Gamby's confession, and then framed better so it felt more meaningful. Like then after he confessed to Jefferson, he could just go to church and, I don't know, talk to
someone. Or it should have been in an earlier episode so that more people who aren't May could have realized that there was something wrong with Gamby.
I knew he was shady from the start, you guys, okay. I also agree that it felt like there was no tension, and the shower scene, you hit the nail on the head. It was so creepy, primarily, obviously, because Lala killed LaWanda, and now he wants to make out with her, or she wants to make out with him, or her ghost wants to make out with him. I don't know, it was weird. It was trippy, but it was a bit off-putting and unnecessary, given that we'd already begun to see Lala unravel in the car scene, at least in front of, you know, the people he works with. And this is a nitpick, but I wanted them to leave Jennifer's powers reveal to Anissa until the next episode, because I don't think the scene was long enough to do it justice. And also because no one in her family has been telling her the truth. What I also disliked is, and this is more of like a huh moment, you know, is when Gamby explains his past and tells Jefferson he has to stop being Black Lightning or the ASA will come after him. And I'm like, then why were you so adamant about him going back to the streets as Black Lightning to begin with? Like, shouldn't Gamby have assumed that the ASA would come back into play and try to restart their experiments? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point, because it does sort of seem like the ASA element, like his connection to ASA just sort of popped up out of nowhere from one day to the next. So was it just like he thought he was done with them and then suddenly he was not done with them?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. It is a little weird, because it's not like he didn't know that they were still around, since he just walked right up to Lady Eve and was like, hey, what's up, Lady Eve?
So, right.
I also totally agree that this episode was all over the place structurally. It didn't, like May had planned out, it didn't have a theme that ties it together, which is unusual, because I feel like every episode of this show so far kind of has, like, one overarching theme, or, like, everything feels like it's in place for a reason leading up to a particular event. And maybe it's because the event this week was finding out the truth about Gamby. And so it just kind of felt like a letdown, because we already know. I don't know. Maybe that's what it was. I love the opening sequence that showed, you know, Jefferson and Anissa are training while we're hearing how everyone else feels about Black Lightning right now. But then I thought it was kind of a missed opportunity to show that in action. You know, like, what if we had seen Jefferson trying to help someone to begin with and then nearly getting in trouble, or, you know, something happening because people are against Black Lightning now? That would have been, I don't know, more dramatic or more something. I also thought it was a missed opportunity to see how Tobias is dealing with Tori's death.
Yes.
I feel like that's a really, you know, in the immediate aftermath of that, I really want to know, like, what is he plotting against Black Lightning, or, like, is there a funeral for her? Like, why isn't Is it because she is supposed to already be dead that she can't be on the news? Like, as someone who died, you know? And also, since Jefferson does feel guilty for her death, that could have also played into it. And if she can't be on the news because Tobias isn't hiding, or because he's already supposed to be dead or whatever, then we should know how he feels about that. Like, he can't honor his sister like he would like to, because whatever. You understand. Anyway, I just was wondering how Tobias was doing the whole episode, and I did not find out. So
that he was not in.
Yeah, oh, yeah, which, yes, seems like a really odd choice. Yeah, that seems, yeah, really odd. All right, so like we had mentioned, the tension felt a little bit lacking this week, possibly because too much time was spent on Gambi and his guilt. And like May, I found the scene of Lynn confronting Gambi to be strange, but a little bit, I thought that she jumped to the correct conclusion, but still like super fast. Because like she already knew that he had been there for 30 years. And then she's like, wait a second, you're not answering my question. And you were there 30 years ago. I figured it out. You did the green light. I was like, okay. I guess. I wish that I was that smart. Like you, Jess, the whole church scene, I was waiting for Mrs. Johnson to be revealed. Like some ASA member, or like, I don't know, was also some kind of LaWanda-esque angel haunting Gambi. Like, I don't know. I was like, what is going on right now? This is so weird. And then they also focused on like the dude singing. And so I thought there was something going on with the dude singing. And I was also like, they're like the only people in the church. Like, who is this, a rehearsal? Like, who is this dude singing for? It was all very weird. I did not know what was happening. And we didn't need that scene. Unless we find out later that he was actually there for a very special reason, in which case, y'all are geniuses. And I didn't get it yet.
But they'd have to remind us who she is, because I would have forgotten by then.
I think they just showcased, like, some white music since, I don't know.
They're like, oh, we have to help the audience, like the white members of the audience along. They're feeling lost. They need the Jesus to guide them. All right. So, yep, I liked Lala talking in the car. I did not like Lala talking with LaWanda in the shower. It was weird. Like, if she only appears to him when he's alone, just like the end of last week, and then she appeared to him while he's in the shower, then okay, that'd be one thing. Like, we saw him be normal with his peeps, and then we see that he's still being haunted by her. Then they would have serve a purpose. But instead, I don't feel like it was any different from the car scene, other than it was just now creepy, because they're kissing in the shower, and like, please don't make out with the ghost of the woman you murdered. Like, I don't like it. I don't want it to happen. And I'm assuming that LaWanda, it's not really LaWanda, you know, like, she's nothing like LaWanda. I assume it's just his conjuring of a LaWanda, but I still don't like it. I'm still feels wrong, and I don't want it to happen. So, predictions.
This is not a prediction, but like, what the hell happened with the whole Khalil is working with Tobias plot? Is it no longer a thing because he and Jennifer are no longer a thing? Is it no longer a thing because Tobias is currently preoccupied with whatever he was doing this episode that we didn't see? All of the above. I need answers so it doesn't feel like a complete waste to me.
Yeah, I feel like Khalil, like that whole storyline, you know, Lady E's death, like we said, took care of that, because the Freeland citizens ain't loyal unless it's to, you know, some random community lady that was in the news, because they switched on him so fast. Like, you didn't even need Khalil to do that. Like, what is Khalil going to do? Or say more that's going to make Freeland hate Jefferson more than they already do, like, right now. But, my concern, or what I'm interested in, I keep trying to, like, count the years and the time difference to try and get the chronology right. I'm like, okay, so Greenlight was first introduced 30 years ago. And so what is that 30-year gap ASA has been doing? What they've been doing for 30 years between that first Freeland experiment and now? And, like, I assume Alvin's impending expose made them stop, but like, it's kind of like what you're saying with Lynn and Jefferson broke up over Black Lightning, so he stopped being Black Lightning for 9 years, and she still didn't take him back, so like, what were they doing during those 9 years?
They were waiting for a television deal.
I was like, what has the ASA been doing for 30 years that they haven't, you know, come back into Freeland? Why are they coming back into Freeland, like, right now? I don't know. Like, and what I feel like, I really do feel like they have something to do with Lala, and I hope that gets explained soon, because I'm just confused about the chronology and who is where and why and what.
I like that idea that Lala's resurrection is connected to Proctor, connected to ASA and Greenlight. So I hope that that comes true. And I also kind of am wondering now, maybe since last episode we saw that Tobias was not a fan of the green light situation, maybe he and Jefferson will end up unwittingly teaming up to take down the ASA before they go back to being enemies. Like, if Tobias was like, nobody fucks with these people but me, only I get to talk shit about them. So yes, that's my not really prediction, but thoughts. All right, are we ready for the runner-up?
The runner-up nominees?
Oh.
I don't know if Legends really had one. Maybe
no, like
Not really.
No, I don't really think so. Like, Sarah didn't really do anything this week.
Yeah.
She was just kind of like backup for the Axel storyline. And Zari had some sweet moments with Wally, and she like taught him a few things, but it wasn't really.
Yeah. And it was more just there for Nate to.
Yeah.
Goo-goo
eyes. It's like the Legends writers heard us talking about how this season was more about the ladies, and they were like, wait.
But they decided to bring in Elvis. That's not what I wanted.
That's kind of weird. Like, I think this is the first time that we're like, nope. I'm from this show.
Black Lightning, Anissa and Jennifer are probably both good contenders. I mean, you know what?
Well, Anissa did save her dad.
Exactly. Anissa saved her dad. Jennifer had something horrifying happen to her and then was like, you know who's going to help me with this? My family. Smart thought.
Poor Jennifer.
I guess Anissa is the most.
Yes.
Assumption itch this
yeah, week. Her commitment to learning.
Her father at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She used brains and her brawn.
She trusted her instincts.
Yep. Yeah.
So she can be a good runner-up.
I like it. So that concludes side A.
Yes, it does.
Soon we will be back for side B. Light in the darkness. And miscellaneous thoughts. Because there's no arrow.
All right, welcome back to Ladies with Gumption. We recap DCTV in a flash. This is our side B, where we will talk about Flash, Light in the Darkness, because there is no arrow this week. To recap our contact info, you can reach us on Twitter at DCTVGumption, by email ladieswgumption@gmail.com, or on our individual Tumblrs, which Jessica and I receive nothing because we love Tati more. I see how it is. But anyway, you can. It's okay. I love all of you.
Our villain origin stories.
Our individual Tumblrs are Tati's, which you probably already know, Valerie M. Perez. Jessica's is Falling in Love in a Flash, and mine is Her Own Hero Writer. You can also listen to this podcast on iTunes. Leave us a nice, kind review if you are so inclined. And you can also listen to us on Google Play and check us out on Facebook if that's your thing, which doesn't seem like it is for anybody. Now moving into our feedback, we did get an email from Kendall, who had some commentary about the double standards of fandom when it comes to Iris. And she knows we've talked about this, but it still frustrates her that Iris is the one who gets shit from fanboys and certain other fans for daring to be something other than just a reporter, and how haters think it's unbelievable that she's also a leader. But Caitlin has a bajillion PhDs, is a doctor who's apparently an expert in biochemical engineering or whatever, chemistry, physics, mechanics, organic chemistry, biochemistry, molecular biology, genetics, which means Caitlin, she says, would have had to have started med school at the age of 11. Plus, she performed brain surgery on Dominic in episode 9, and yet no one says that what she does is unrealistic, but Iris coming up with the lightning solution is the thing haters can't believe on this show. Kendall just wants Iris to live, and we do too, Kendall, trust me.
Like, and even in season 3, like, she operated on herself with no anesthesia. Like, and she's like, we're like playing Operation on Caitlin's body, and she's like, oh yeah, I'm cool with it, just put that there, you know? And it's just not realistic. But yet, Iris is supposed to not be able to grow at all. Yeah. But, you know, Caitlin's profession changes depending on whatever the episode is, and it's fine, and like no one questions it. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of double standards, and I think that's just for all of the quote-unquote science types. Mm-hmm. That everyone has like 50 million PhDs and all this other shit, and like, even if you are a genius, even if you want to say that she is a genius, mm-hmm. being smart, you can't skip over 8 years of residency that you have to go through to get to be a doctor. Like, you can't skip that. Like, Lexi Gray had a photo on Grey's Anatomy. Kyler Lee's character had a perfect memory recall, and she still had to go through a residency program. So that, you know, you can't speed that up. So it just really doesn't make sense, you know, when they had time to do all this stuff that they're supposed to be, quote unquote, able to do.
It's what I call the white woman wonder, in which they will defend white women for whatever reason, because she is the only white woman on the show. And so she doesn't get questioned. But narratively speaking, it's like when people say that Iris doesn't know anything or do anything, or they have to, like, she has no storyline outside of Barry, or she doesn't have, you know, personality or character or whatever. The thing is, Iris doesn't need an excuse to be on The Flash, whereas Caitlin has a bajillion PhDs and a bunch of different types of jobs because they need her to have an excuse as to why she is on the show. I mean,
right. What she does is what she brings to the table. Yeah. Whereas Iris, it wouldn't matter what Iris did because she's already important to the person who is The Flash.
Exactly. You know, her story only revolves around Barry. Barry is the title character. Everyone's story is revolving around Barry. Like,
yeah. People are myopic with Iris, or like, people just focus on Iris, and that's the case for both sides. It's whether you hate her or you love her, it's like, everyone micromanages everything that Iris does, and no one questions what anyone else is doing. Which, I guess, goes to show that, you know, she's just that powerful. It's just like, Barry, Iris, and then just the amorphous blob of other people that apparently doesn't matter if they don't have jobs and live off food stamps.
Right. They're just living in Star Labs.
Like, this episode, when Cisco tells Harry to go home, and it's like, Harry lives in Star Labs.
Right.
Like, yeah. We don't actually know of another place that Harry
goes. He's a murder on Earth one. He can't go home. It makes no sense. So we're just as frustrated as you, Kendall. I'm sorry. We have to constantly deal with this all the time. But thank you for your email and your comments and for venting. Please feel free to do it anytime. We enjoy emails. And our next email, this is the second part of Ivy's email, in which she sent us some of her thoughts on this week's Flash. And so the only feedback she says she has is that she just enjoyed seeing Iris as the speedster. It was everything. And she's so glad that she's getting back into journalism. And, you know, she loved that the team talked about how wonderful she is, or implied it, because she doesn't get that as often as some of the other people on the show. And she also loved Barry being a supportive husband and Joe not having it when, you know, it came to Ralph doubting Iris. And then she did not enjoy Leonard Nam, who was on Westworld, holding a scalpel to Iris' throat. And she's concerned that he's on the team, but I guess Iris is unbothered, so it's fine, right? And
Iris says it's okay.
She says, yeah, it's not the first time it's happened. It's true. It's true, Ivy. It's not the first time it's happened. And finally, she wants us to drag Stretch Armstrong, a.k.a. Ralph, because she wants him to long go away, which we will totally drag him. That is half of my dislikes.
Yeah, this is going to be an hour long of just, like, run Iris front.
And finally, we got an email from Tasha. So last week, Jessica asked, as our only major Arrow fan, she asked Tasha what she thought of the Elicity scene last week, because we talked about it. And then Tasha emailed back a very long email, thank you Tasha, about how in Arrow's early days she did ship Laurel and Oliver because of comic canon. But then, of course, they ruined that with the whole sleeping with her sister thing. And then she also thought the show would want to capitalize on the fact that Stephen Amell and Emily Bett Ricards had good chemistry, but doesn't mean that she thought Stephen and Katie didn't have any chemistry. And her perception is that Stephen Amell is not playing Green Arrow, that he's playing Bat Arrow. And this is true because, like, the show kind of sprouted out from, or was inspired by, the Dark Knight trilogy, right? So he plays Oliver with a rigid, quote-unquote, she says, rigid remote aloofness that only softens in rare moments with Thea and Felicity. But she does understand the complaints about the Elicity scenes, and that she realizes Stephen Amell does this far-off gaze with most of his co-stars, and she thinks it's meant to be his brooding contemplation face, or his trying to remember his lines face. But she thinks that despite these things, Steven ad-libs things like squeezing Felicity's shoulder or, you know, reaching out to hold her hand and kissing her head. So, I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's true that he does that. We haven't seen it as often this season.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that she was saying about the reason that there's a lack of Felicity scenes in the back half is because before, when they were together, and this is true, that there's so much drama between them being together and then breaking up and then, you know, with them rubbing salt in the different storylines about, you know, William and the Cupid arrow thing. And it was just like it caused a lot of complaints about Felicity and Felicity in particular. And we've talked about this before, how as soon as she got close to Oliver and then she started doing all of these things, that Vanna thought was wrong, and a lot of the complaints about her and that she's making Oliver soft and emasculating him and all this blah, 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 blah. And it's the same stuff that comes up with The Flash and people are like, oh, there's too much relationship stuff in here. We just want action and plot. And so that's, I think, like, when you hear fanboys complain about, this is a superhero show, it's supposed to be action, Arrow is what they think, Arrow's doing what these people are asking for by having them a couple together, but not, like, showing any kind of, like, romance or anything at all. And I think she said it was because they wanted to avoid those complaints. So they want, it's kind of like a have your cake and eat it too situation, which it doesn't really, it's not working for me personally. I feel like I shouldn't have to go to, you know, detective Tumblr and Twitter artists to, like, zoom in and find intimate moments in the background. It shouldn't be like a Da Vinci Code type of thing. I think there should be a little more of a balance between there. And it's just...
Yeah, I think my frustration with it is that as the main couple of the show, and this is more of an overall Arrow problem because they kind of fucked it up from the beginning, that a central pairing on the show should move along with the actual story of the show. So every major moment that they should have should also go along with the, you know, Oliver's story. So I don't feel that's ever been the case with him and Felicity. And so because of that, we also see them not really interacting as much because those are not the writer's concerns with regard to their story. Like, it has nothing to do with the main plot necessarily, and so it doesn't really progress in that type of way.
And it pisses me off even more that they, like, maneuvered the whole crossover to be about a love story that they don't even pay attention to on their own show. So, like, why would you have them hijack an entire crossover and you don't even care about them on your own show? Like, it doesn't really make sense to me. Like they did it on the crossover because everybody has to watch that, and they felt like they could do what they want or something. I don't know, but it's just ridiculous to try and, like, push the idea that they are a focused couple in the crossover when you don't even focus on them on your own show.
Yeah,
I think it's unfortunate just because I actually thought that they were pretty well done in the first half of season four, up until the crossover when they did the stupid secret child.
Yeah. Secret.
But, like, for the first seven episodes, I thought that they were doing a really good job with, like, balancing, like, the nice, like, cute romantic touches with the overall plot. And even then, their relationship didn't move the plot, but it was situated nicely so that it didn't feel like it overshadowed, but it also didn't feel like there wasn't enough. And so I think it's a shame that they can't go back to that. I don't really know what they're trying to do. Like, I know Tasha said she thinks it's working because, like, those complaints aren't happening. But I feel like for those of us who aren't as invested in the kind of storyline that Kate and James and now Richard Dragon are, the little romance or family moments are kind of what pull you in.
Yeah, I think they pulled back way too much on the Felicity aspect of it. Like, I can, like, you know, you're trying to course correct from what people hated in season 4 or 5 or whatever, but then I think they went, like, they overcorrected.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you, Tasha, for your email, and we get where you're coming from, and I hope that you understand where we, too, are coming from about the whole Felicity situation. Moving into Flash, we are going to have Tati take it away with the plot recap.
Oh, all right. So, Light in the Darkness. Here's my Run, Iris, Run flash recap. And as we begin, Ralph is being a dumbass and yelling at everyone because he lives in fear and doesn't leave the basement. And he turns his misplaced ire on our precious angel Iris, who grows insecure enough about her position on the team that she decides to go out in the field with Joe in search of the latest bus meta. Now, this meta's name is Matthew Kim, and he has the power to transfer other people's powers, which is exactly what he does when Barry flashes in to save his bae from Matthew's scalpel. So, he touches them both, and now suddenly, Iris has super speed and Barry has emo feels. But despite the loss of his best friend, Speed, he stays as supportive as possible in the face of Iris's enthusiasm. Another meta that Kim accidentally created is starting fires all over the place, so Iris has to rush in to save the day. She gets all the people out of the burning building, because she's the best, but then she gets trapped in the fire and needs Cisco to vibe her out. Thanks, Cisco! This is when Barry starts to get nervous about her going out in the field again, but Iris has to whip out some real talk with him and tells him that she's tired of being afraid and is ready to prove herself to herself, that she has what it takes to start living her best life again after Savitar and after Speed Force depression times. So she goes out against Mr. Give Me My Money once again, and this time she ends up making a tidal wave with the delayed help of the team. After the day is saved, Matthew Kim, aka Melting Point, apologizes for taking Barry's powers and giving them to Iris. And once they agree that they want them switched back, he does just that, before asking if he can join the team to help them stop DeVoe. I don't feel like they told him that everyone else has died, so I hope he's aware of that before he signs the team contract. Anyway, Barry pretends that he would have been fine with letting Iris keep those powers, and she sets him straight once again, pointing out that speed may be his passion, but she has recently rediscovered that journalism is hers. So she is heading back to blogging, and we can all exhale after 15 episodes of wondering what happened to her job. Meanwhile, Harry must defeat DeVoe or die trying, because if he's not the smartest man alive, then how is life even worth living? Cisco is less than impressed with his line of reasoning and leaves Wells to his Thawne-like ways for most of the episode, refusing to help him with the so-called thinking cap. But Harry finally annoys Cisco into agreeing to help on the condition that he'll become Earth-2's problem once again if he goes Doc Ock on anybody. But by the end of the episode, Harry has now used the cap to divine the names of the last two bus metas. So now the team can find them and get DeVoe to kill them. Yay! That's what you miss in the flesh.
DeVoe to kill them. Okay.
So, what did you like about the episode? I feel like it sounds like I didn't like it from that recap, but I really liked it.
Subdued recap. You're just, like, hyping your excitement. I think, obviously, like, this episode was a long time coming for a lot of fans to see Iris in her speedster suit. I thought that she was just so cute learning how to use her powers. Like, that giggle when she comes in, she's like, oh, this is amazing! I thought that was really cute moment for her. And I also liked the small moment where the camera pans over to Cisco and he's kind of like smiling because he's like happy for her. So it's really nice moment between the two of them. I also love that he had the presence of mind to like breach in and save her when Barry froze. And then he was so ready for at the end to come back and be the leader of the team. He's like, please and thank you. And so I thought she got like a lot of good. There's a lot of good moments between other characters and Iris. So Cisco was one. Caitlin, I thought, was was kind of cute.
There was a pause there.
Okay, it was weird, but it was kind of cute. And I don't know if this is, like, Eric's script or if it's, like, Danielle's Danielliness. Like, she's got a weird, like, facial thing that she always does. And there's a whole lot of "you go girl."
She literally said that twice. So I was like, all right, it's just nothing else for her to say.
It was like odd, but I was like, okay. At least she was like support. supportive, and it was more, I feel like it was more hashtag feminism than the actual hashtag feminism episode.
Yeah.
Where there was something that I thought was weird on the dislike side, but I'll leave that for later. Barry was, like, understandably a little bit mopey because he didn't have his powers, but I like that he was there to support his wife the way that she's always been there to support him. Like, he was training her, and it was just a nice role reversal with Iris being the one to express her insecurities and her fears, and Barry being the one to, like, reassure her. I liked that when it was time for Iris to be a hero, like, when she got her first mission to save people, I do like it. First of all, she was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. Killer Frost, you're going to go. You're on fire duty. You guys did it. But then when they were like, you know, we have a Flash, we have Iris, that she didn't really hesitate to run into the fire, unlike some other people that live in basements. You know, she was just like super disguised, check, and she like undresses Caitlin, basically, takes a mask, and she's like off and out there. Like the actual visuals of her running up in the building with the purple lightning, I thought was awesome. I felt so proud watching her, like seeing people like, yeah, I got this kind of thing. But I also like that she struggled a little bit. So her on comms being like, guys, what do I do? Makes more sense to me than Barry, because she obviously doesn't, you know all of the physics around it, or might not necessarily know what to do. She's been a speedster for 2 seconds. So, you know, I saw a lot of people complaining that she knew everything. She didn't know everything. She's like, well, how do I do this? And it's like, okay, I've seen you do that. Let me do that. And it wasn't working. And then she winds up having to be saved. So she wasn't like infallible immediately. So I do like that part of it. I thought that her, like all the visual effects of her running were great. All of Grant's like green screen running tips really paid off, because I thought that she looked fantastic. I feel like we should have had more with her as far as like having like little bitty missions to kind of build up what she actually felt and thought about being a speedster. But I do like what we saw, and I like that the whole episode ended with her refocusing on her passion for journalism. And like about that, I love how selfless Barry and Iris are with each other, and that even though he felt down without his powers, he told her that she didn't have to give him up if she didn't want to. It's like, that's kind of like what a supportive husband does. Like, he, like low-key, he knows that she's not going to like steal his powers forever and that she give them back. But I like that he gave her the option, because he understood how she, where she was coming from with her insecurity. So he was like, I'm willing to give up being a speedster for a couple more days if that's what you need to feel like, you know, you are doing something or feel complete. So he was willing to give that up for her. And I thought that was really sweet. Secondly, in spite of Ralph being just like an asshole the whole episode, I liked that it allowed an opportunity for Iris to open up more about where she was coming from with Savitar and how that really affected her. Because we never really have gotten into that before. And how she lost herself in the midst of that whole storyline from last season, and how it's finally come full circle for her. And we already heard that, you know, Candace and Todd talking about her journalism playing a major part in 21, and hopefully leading to more Ace Reporter Iris in season 5. So I just think that it was a really good introduction into that new phase of her story. So that was awesome.
Yeah. Aww. I also loved seeing Speedster Iris. I felt like Jess, I was proud. I felt like a proud parent, you know, watching my daughter go off and do great heroic things. I think it just suited her very well. You know, she's always been the type of person who has been a hero outside of a suit and without powers. She's like the human aspect of the show, and always proves that things can be done without a science degree and without, you know, magical abilities. And I think that's really special. And I like that the show came back to that message and also allowed Iris to express all the emotions I wish she'd expressed in the like the last third of last season. And it was nice to see that the whole Savitar storyline has not been forgotten, and that the ramifications on her were not tossed aside. So she got to express her insecurities. She was sympathetic to Barry because she knew how much his powers were a part of his identity. And she also got to turn inward with regards to what it is she wants to do, because she's been, I think, and Todd Helbing mentioned this in like one of the interviews, and it's true, she's been such a selfless and giving character throughout all 4 seasons of the show. And it was nice for her to think about herself for once and what it is that she's truly passionate about. And I loved seeing her train. And I loved even more that we saw some parallels with regards to Barry using his powers or when he first got his powers, like the vibrating hand and the treadmill. And I liked the fact that Barry was the one to get to talk to her and be supportive, like Jess said, without being... He wasn't, like, ever really jealous that she had his powers either. He was just feeling bad because... Mopey. Right, he was just a little bit mopey, but we, you know, he got to express why. So, like, I loved that he got to tell her that she's the bravest person he knows. That was a really sweet and great moment because I feel like deep down we've always known he's thought this, but to hear him say it out loud was, you know, a nice confirmation. I thoroughly enjoyed listening to Barry give her a push over the comms as she's done for him so many times, and I just, like, love the overall role reversal that they got to run a mile in each other's shoes, quite literally. And we saw how, you know, this was the first time for Barry behind the comms and how he didn't know what he was doing and how he looked lost when Iris first left and was, like, asking Cisco. He's like, hey, can I just hang out here with you? So I thought that was really funny. And you know what? No one else knew what they were doing either. So I like that this episode highlighted how good of a leader Iris is and how she's clearly the quick thinker when it comes to coming up with scenarios and strategies. I feel like the team was really lost without her. Like Jess said, you know, Cisco saying please and thank you, like, come back, we need you. And I like that Cisco got to save her this episode, which was really nice to see. And I did like that Caitlin was supportive because she is usually the pessimistic one. Like, she's usually the first to be like, no, I don't think we can do that, or how are you going to do that? But she was rooting for Iris throughout this episode, which was nice. And she's grown. I guess that bonding in episode 5 really paid off.
Yep.
I also like that we got to see Iris and Joe bonding because we haven't seen that in a while. And Joe is basically me about what he said to her regarding Ralph. I also liked seeing Barry and Joe have a scene together because it's been a while too. And while the Ralph dislikes will obviously be in the dislike section, I did like the last conversation, like Jess did, between him and Iris, but only because it gave Iris an opportunity to, you know, talk about her feelings. And, like, I think her fear made a lot of sense, and I like the way it tied back to her wanting to find her passion, which is journalism. And I love the callback to season 1 in Iris's blog. When she turned the screen, Barry's expression was my expression, and I got a little emotional. Because I wasn't expecting to see that, and I like the fact that this seems to be the direction, you know, the show's moving in, and that they're not going to strip her away from her leadership either just by giving her back her journalism, because she can do all. And, what else? I think seeing everyone else, you know, when Iris said she's going to come back to being a leader, I think that just showed how far this season has come and how much the team has improved and how they've become better functioning.
Yeah.
And I really did like that the show did give Iris something to do that Barry hasn't done as a speedster. And then it kind of turned into, like, this flirty thing that was happening instead of Barry being pissed off about it. And, wow, this is really long. Finally, I really like the fact that even though Barry probably did know, like Jess said, that Iris would not keep his, you know, his powers when given the opportunity to give them back, I like that he didn't just be like, give me back my powers, and that he let her be the decision maker and not, he didn't claim ownership over that, which was really nice and supportive of him.
Because they are the Flash.
Yes, they are the Flash. And I think that speaks volumes about the selflessness of their love. And finally, finally, I just really enjoyed that Iris said journalism was her destiny and how that was the way that she could be her own hero and the city's hero as well. So that was really nice.
Her own hero writer, perhaps.
Her own hero writer.
Yes.
Wow. I love,
tie back to the comics with, you know, Barry being the justice and Iris being the truth.
Iris being the truth.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
I love that quote.
I am done. I am finally done.
Before I get into my likes, of which there are many, I just wanted to point out, like, what you guys said about the final Ralph scene. Ralph and Iris, when he apologizes and stuff. I know I wasn't the only one. I know other people have seen it. But did you see it? Ralph was looking at Iris like
He wished that he could play Barry Allen.
Oh, that was Harley.
I know that was Harley. I know that was Harley. Ralph in quotations. But I was like, what is happening right now? I know this is not part of the scene. This is very weird. I was like, there's some one-sided chemistry going on here. It's very strong. Anyway.
Because you know Candace would never play that scene like that, because she knows Iris is a one-man woman.
Exactly. Candace isn't playing the scene like that, but Harley low-key is. I don't know. Do you guys agree with this?
You can, like, put it as, like, a character trait for Iris, because she's usually, like, oblivious unless someone, like, trips, like, I like you. And so this is another scene where, like, she's, like, winning people over, and she's like, oh, la-di-da-da, and they're but like, I'm in love with you.
Ralph is also still mopey. He's still mopey about Izzy, so maybe he's just like, I need a woman in my life.
Maybe that's what it is. And since I'm continuing to put off the best for last, I will go into all the non-Iris things that I liked first.
The ridiculousness of the villains with Fry and his,
give me my money!
And then, like, Max Adler with his fire character. I don't even know if that guy had a name. He's like, give me my money!
Fry, the British man who won't take the subway. Yeah. Yep. They were quite funny. I agree with that, like. Okay, so I very much liked how genuinely concerned Sisko was about Harry using the thinking cap, and that it was for a very good reason, because DeVoe was like a, you know, intellectual pacifist who became a crazy axe murderer with a thinking cap, and Harry is already a rageaholic, so that cannot go anywhere good. I also liked him mocking Fry's British accent. That was so funny to me. And then how Fry's British, like, posh accent turned Cockney once he was caught. So it was like... Also, like you pointed out, I loved Sisko being, like, silently supportive of Iris as a speedster, and then, like, much more vocally supportive of Iris as the leader. I really like the little tiny moments that we get of that friendship. They are very tiny. We never get more, but Carlos and Candace do a really great job with little tiny moments like that. Anyway, I did like that we checked in with Joe's dad fears, because that man is not ready to be a dad again. He does not want this in his life.
Hilarious.
Yes. And it was funny to me that he was like, yeah, you'll know the baby's name once the seal tells you the baby's name. I also think they're keeping it from us for a very specific reason. And I guess I like it because I'm like, oh, I see you. But I also don't like it for obvious reasons. Anyway. Also, him reminding Iris that he knows how brave she is and that Ralph ain't shit made me so happy. I love that everyone reinforced that. Like, you've got Ralph here just basically saying, oh, you just sit back there behind you, you don't really do anything as a leader, blah. And then everyone else is like, that's not true. We all know that's not true. We know that that's Ralph and that you are actually the first one to go out whenever anyone needs something. So I thought that was really nice. I also loved, like May pointed out, Barry being, like, lost and confused when Iris said to go out in the field, like, even before the power switch. He's like, oh, okay, I guess I'm just going to be here. Like, tell me if you need me. I'll come running, because that's all I do. I don't know what else to do. I also liked Matthew Kim. Leonardo Nam did a great job. And he was like, he just gave him such a little, like, soft, like, I just want to, like, hold him. Like, oh, it's okay. Except for when he grabbed Iris. That was not cool. But if we pretend that didn't happen, then I was like, oh, don't worry. You seem like you can help people. He just, you know, got a little scared, and I would like to trade Ralph for him, so I'm fine with that. Also love Caitlin being supportive, and this episode, like Jess said, did more to advance the myth that they are friends than any episode since 405. But then, of course, the real stuff, the important stuff, the stuff that matters, was Iris as a speedster. She was awesome. Candace did a great job with, like, all the different layers that she had to play in that episode, like, from her enthusiasm at gaining powers, which was infectious. It really felt like we were back in season one with, like, the first time that Barry discovered his power. You know, like, that's how excited she was. And then, like, the little, like, you know, having to, like, try to go through little training and, like, not knowing how to slow down, the whole little I'm straight ad lib, like, everything that she did, just, like, super cute, super fun. I just wanted more of it. And like you pointed out, too, I like that she failed at some of the tricks that she tried. Like, there's stuff that she was good at, and then there's stuff that's harder. Like, it took many more episodes for Barry to learn. So, of course, she's not going to get it. And especially she's not going to get it when Barry's just like, you know, just do it. Yeah. Just do it, babe. Like, oh, okay. where is Eobard Thawne when you need him to explain to you how the Speed Force feels like an erection? But anyway, I loved her purple lightning. And I especially loved that, like, no one even questioned it. No one was like, why is her lightning purple? Because, like, people have had different colored lightnings, and it's like, whatever. Even though we're here, like, constantly, every minute of the episode, we're like, her lightning's purple! They're gonna tell us about it! Like, all the questions to Todd are about the purple lightning. And nobody actually cares in-universe, which I love. I actually really liked the shot of her running up the stairs to the building, where you, like, sort of, like, see her, like, whooshing up. It's, like, from her perspective, I thought it was really cool. Especially because, like, you compare it first, like, you see the streak across the street, and then you see it from her perspective in the building. So I really enjoyed that. I thought they did a lot of cool stuff with only having one episode to use those special effects for now. So yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I also love Barry being emo at the thought of not having his powers, but still being supportive of his day and trying to teach her how to use them. And like, it was funny because it's like, he tried for a really long time to, like, not really, really long time, but, you know, for them it's a really long time, to make it seem like he was cool, but then it's like, sad face, like, oh, the DeVoe's taken everything from me. What if I never get my powers back? So, I thought it was cute. I was like, oh, he can't hold it anymore. He's gonna be like, oh, me. So, anyway. I really enjoyed those moments, because, like, I like that we got that little bit of her comforting him, and then the next time around, he's trying to help her when she's explaining how like, lost she's felt since Avatar, since the Speed Force storm, and all of that stuff. And even though I think it lasted, like, a beat too long a couple of times, I liked how consistent it was that he froze when the woman he loves is in danger. That's what happened with Savitar. Too fucking slow, even though it would not take that long. Just fucking save her. But he can't do it. It's hard. It's hard. I understand. I also liked him getting winded when he ran from the speed lab to the cortex. It was literally just... He comes in like, okay. Like, he hasn't run at normal speed in so long.
Also, him not. Has he ever run at normal speed? Like, even before? Right. Ever?
He lost his powers and he was on the treadmill. He's like, Cisco's like, you run slowly even for a normal person.
Yes! I love that. I love it. So I thought they mined a lot of little comedic beats out of that. I also loved the West Allen hug when Cisco saved Iris with Vibe. And the fact that Cisco did that without anyone having to tell him was also great. But Barry saying, thank you, Cisco. I loved that. I loved it. But the thing that made me happiest was Iris getting to express herself several times throughout the episode, to feel vulnerable, to like, actually, like, seek advice and seek comfort from others, and to, you know, receive it from Joe and Barry, especially. I liked how they tied her quitting her job, although, you know, they didn't have to go that far. I was like, she still has her job, it's fine, but, you know, whatever. And they made it a thing. And they said that it was, you know, that post-Savitar fear, and then that post-Barry in the Speed Force sadness. And I think that makes total sense. Like, yeah. I know some people were like, oh, but she said last season that she wasn't scared of dying. And I was like, yeah, like, one time she said she was scared of dying.
Yeah.
And then she was like, you know what, never mind, I am fucking scared. Like, she's allowed to change her mind about it, jeez.
Episode 12, so, yeah. Guys, she said, I'm scared, Barry. It was there.
Exactly. And then not just that, but, like, it was, like, a paralyzing fear, emotionally, but also narratively in the story for 12 episodes. Yeah. And then once that is gone, like, the second that she's free of that, Barry's, like, fake dies for the 30th time. And then she feels, like, that weight of protecting the city in his absence. Got to get Wally up to Flash speed, and Cisco's barely had any time to, like, be a solo hero, you know? So, and Caitlin's not around, so whatever. Of course, it's understandable that then she became, like, as consumed in the Star Labs world as, well, the rest of them are, except for Joe, who never shows up. So yeah, all of that made sense to me, and I liked that they verbalized it. And I also liked that the team trusted her enough to go out and prove herself, even on her first or second day as Purple Flash or Purple Rain. And, like, even though they're a little bit like, she could die. Hundreds of people in these purple complexes could die, but we'll let her try it. And then so I thought that was nice. And it shows, like, it's not, they didn't make a big deal of it, but it does show, like, the unspoken amount of trust that the team does have. And it's not just Barry and Iris. It's all of them. Even stuff like, even, like, when she had to be saved from the fire and Harry was, you know, doing his rage blackout again and being like, another team member was hurt by this because I don't have my thinking cap. Like, it does feel like they are a unit, which I like. And finally, I am very much thrilled with Iris going back to blogging. I love that she recognizes that journalism is a valid way of helping people and that she can find her fulfillment and her passion in that. That final scene of her at the computer, you know, typing with that smile on her face and Barry walking away also smiling like, oh, yay, it's happening again. I loved it. I loved everything. I can't wait to see her as both the team leader and the journalist so that everyone wins because everyone wanted her to go back to journalism.
Yeah.
The team wants her to stay as a leader because they can't do shit without her. And she can do it all. Hashtag feminism.
Imagine a character doing two things.
I can't.
Time.
Sometimes you can even manage to be a wife to Barry, even though she doesn't cook. I did see someone tell Kevin Smith that Iris is not even a wife to Barry because she won't cook for him. So,
wow.
Like, she tried, she did cook, but do you want to eat it?
Why the hell would I be, imagine being married to a speedster. Let's think about this, okay? And thinking, why the hell am I going to get out of bed to go cook if he could do it in 2 minutes? Like, I'm never going to cook again. I don't care if I'm good or bad.
Like, the amount of food that Barry eats. Like, Iris would never be able to leave the kitchen if she had to,
that's true.
That much.
If she had to cook for him, that would be insane. Yeah, no one could do that. No human being can do that. Okay. All right, what did we not like, guys?
I think there's, some big...
It starts with an R.
Yeah. And the other one starts with an H. The Terror Twins, Ralph and Harry. Say that I, when I first watched it the first time when it was live, I was a little bit disappointed because I felt like it took 20 minutes for Iris to actually get Barry's powers, and it was 20 minutes too long. I really wanted her to get powers earlier in the episode, but then the thing that made it feel even more longer was the fact that a third of her episode was focused on Harry and the other half was Ralph, and so it was just like, of all the characters that she could have shared this episode with, y'all picked the worst two to focus and give some shine in her episodes. I didn't really like that at all. But first, I'm just going to get the smaller things out of the way. I already talked about how I wanted her to be a speedster earlier so we could just see all those little moments of her, doing nice things around the city, Iris saved a cat from a tree, or she helped a lady cross the sidewalk, or, some little small things that we got when Barry was first getting his speedster powers in season one. Just little fun moments with her would have been nice, as opposed to spending more time with Harry yelling. The one thing that felt a little bit off about, the Caitlin Iris kind of thing was when the fire... And she first gets out, she's like, okay, Killer Frost, you're on fire duty. And they're like, Iris, you can be the Flash. And they're like, let's go. And then Caitlin doesn't go. I'm like, why? How is Iris going to the fire code for you not doing anything and staying in Star Labs? That makes sense. could we not get a tag team of Killer Frost and Iris? Iris is saving people, Killer Frost putting out fire. I don't know. But I guess, I saw on, I forget which board it was on either YouTube or some kind of review site when people were talking about it and someone was complaining about Killer Frost not being able to put out the fire. And the guy that responded to him was like, well, you don't choose the ice Pokemon to battle a fire Pokemon. That just doesn't make sense. You use a water Pokemon. And Iris did that, but she had the tidal wave. Okay. I can understand that. But in the actual episode, it didn't really make sense why Killer Frost couldn't go and help Iris with the fire. Narratively, it was meant for her to fail at that point, and it was also meant for Barry to fail. That also bothered me because Barry, how do you choke like that? She's about to die, and you're just like, oh. And, no one thought to breach Cisco in earlier. I was kind of frustrated. I'm waiting for Barry to say something or do something. He's just kind of like, oh, no. So, And
he's not a leader, you guys. We all saw the crossover from, the previous year where everyone was trying to look to him as leader, and he's like, I got nothing.
when she does get into trouble, his bright idea is just face through it. I'm like, sir, it took you 17 episodes to figure out that that was something you can do, and then you had to have Eobard, like, walk you through it, and Wally needed a whole TV week to learn how to phase, and she is stressed out, and in a, like, she's been a speedster for 2 seconds. Of course she's not going to know how to phase, Mary, come on. You just don't say, do it. You have to actually, like, give her some help.
And he did that, like, every single time. Like, even when he was like, oh, you need to slow down. She's like, I can't slow down. He's like, okay, just lower your speed slowly. I was like, that's the same thing, Mary.
That's advice, Mary. So it's like when Iris steps back as being the team leader, suddenly no one knows how to think on their feet or, like, what to do. And getting back to, like, the other reason that I didn't like it is her having to share it with two of the biggest, like, bitch babies on the team. Like, I swear to God, I feel like, Harry was having, like, a dick measuring contest with DeVoe, and DeVoe doesn't even know. And it's just like, whose big bad is this? I thought it was supposed to be Barry's big bad. Like, why is it Harry so obsessed with being the smartest person in the world? Like, it really doesn't make sense to me why he's so obsessed with that, with Barry's villain. And I don't understand why people were getting on Cisco's case for being, like, the rational person of not wanting to give this egotistical person more power, because, like, absolute power,
absolute power corrupts absolutely.
That's the one.
That is the one. And so I don't understand why, like, people were getting on his case for not helping Harry doing something that was potentially dangerous for him. And we got hints again from that press junket that it does not really go well for Harry down the road. So it just seems like people were getting on Cisco's case, and he had every reason to not want to help Harry. And then Ralph, like, Ralph's whole existence this entire episode was annoying to me, because especially when he was talking down to Iris, like, where the fuck you get off telling Iris anything? Like, he can't do shit without a pep talk every 5 minutes. But all of a sudden, Iris doesn't know what it's like to be out in the field and risking her life. And all this, like, you don't even want to leave, like, Star Labs. Like, when he thought that there were other metahumans out there that could be sacrificed ahead of him, like, he was fine with that. He was fine with Harry wanting to put on the thinking cap, even though Cisco had brought up all the ways it could go wrong. He was fine with Harry risking his life so he could be safe. And it's like, so where do you get off feeling down or, like, making someone that does want to help people feel bad about themselves when you can't even get out of your room? You're, like, stress eating your feelings. Like, who the fuck are you? Kind of thing. And it's just, like, I don't know. The whole episode, and I know you'll go on, so I'll stop ranting for a minute and let you rant as well, because it was just very, like, ridiculous to me. But, like, the constant regression of his character and the back and forth just seems tiring, and I'm over it, and he just needs to go if he doesn't want to be a part of the team. Like, he made, like, such progress in 14 with, we're gonna go, we're gonna help people, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh good, there's someone else to die before me, so I don't have to die.
Yeah,
that's pretty much exactly what he said. So just shut the fuck up, Ralph.
Basically. I mean, my blood pressure will rise. I really, really hated Ralph this episode. Like, just when I was starting to warm up to him in episode 14, he goes and reminds me that he is a complete and utter shithead. He had the audacity to think that he could talk down to and demean Iris for not doing enough and not knowing what it means to be in danger when he's only been around for the team for 2 seconds and knows absolutely nothing. First of all, Ralph, Iris was the one to say that they should explore Harry's thinking cap idea because she wanted to save your ass, as she has done all season. So it boggles me that he was mad at Iris for not trying to help him, even though it was Cisco who was the one who was not on board because it involved dark matter. He was acting all high and mighty, knowing damn well that when that fire came along and Iris did not hesitate to go into the field to save those people like she's never hesitated before when she was needed, and he was like, no, I'm just going to sit here and think about myself and be mopey like a fucking whiny asshole. Jess is absolutely right that he needs a pep talk every couple of episodes, and he needs to be convinced to be a hero because he has no fucking moral compass to speak of, and yet he has to put down Iris, who has proven herself over and over again how heroic she can be when she doesn't usually have any fucking powers. So who was the one who was about to run into the field to save Cisco and Caitlin when Ralph decided he was too scared to die? Iris. Who ran into the field with no powers to help unshrink your ass? Iris. But no, let's spend episodes trying to make Ralph a hero when he couldn't even be bothered to try and save people inside a burning building because he was too busy munching on chips and worrying about whether DeVoe would come and kidnap his ass. Like, I actually hoped that DeVoe would show up so he can take him off everyone's hands and we can all live in peace. And I hated that he made Iris feel worse after she tried to rescue those people from the burning building, which she did do instead of congratulating her on a job well done for someone who just got powers and was just learning how to use them. Like, this is a minor nitpick, but I did not like the fact that no one told him to shut up and stop hating on her after she got hurt, because that was completely uncalled for. And, like, he was being rude and his stupid angry behavior was like the dumbass fanboys who can constantly complain and bitch and moan about everything, and it got on my nerves. And, like, if he's not gone by the end of the season, I swear, I'm going to be really annoyed, because his presence and utter selfishness is bringing down the season for me at this point. Okay, now that that's off my chest, my blood pressure is now lowered, and I can talk to you about some of my other dislikes. I agree with Jessica about wanting to have seen Iris have her powers, you know, like in a little montage, or it would have been cute to see her spending more time with them, because I was, you know, thrown off over the fact that she didn't gain her powers until 20 minutes in as well. Like, having watched it a second time, it goes by much faster, but I still would have liked more development with regards to that. Like, we could have spent more time, or, you know, have pushed the story from a previous episode as well. I think it would have helped. Harry's subplot was not really that important to the story for me. I mean, it was, but I feel like there could have only been two scenes for him. And I understand that he wants to take down DeVoe, but I still don't get, like, just, you know, why he's so obsessed with doing it. Because he's not the one being directly affected.
He's being selfish about it, because he doesn't want to take down DeVoe because DeVoe is bad. He wants to take down DeVoe because DeVoe is smarter than him, and that's just selfish about it. Stupid.
And it's like Barry and Iris and Ralph, of all people, who are being the most affected by him. So, what the hell are you on about, you know? And it would have been fine if they had just had Harry do the beginning and then near the end of the episode to tie everything together, but otherwise, like, too much time was just wasted on that. I didn't like the fact that Harry was, with the thinking cap on, was the one to come up with how to use the tidal wave to stop the meta, because I think that Barry has had his powers long enough, he could have come up with that on his own. So that really bugged me. Mm-hmm. I'm done.
That thinking cap to come up with, get a lot of water.
Right. Yeah. Like, Barry's done a lot of things with his powers, and I don't understand. It just continues to just prove that the team situation is kind of unnecessary, and I have a theory on Harry that I will share with you in my predictions.
But yeah, it does feel like you either feel like the writers aren't, like, just don't have more science knowledge to go with, like, a more difficult explanation, or just, like, they don't feel like trimming down the team. Because, like, at this point, how are five or four or however many scientists are in that room not going to come up with that on their own? Like, oh, okay. But anyway, the episode did start off slow for me. Like, I was a little bit bummed when the opening scene was Harry and his, you know, obsession with stopping DeVoe seemed, like, unnecessary. I'm not invested in Harry's need to be the smartest man alive. I don't like that this makes DeVoe feel like Harry's villain and not Barry's villain. And it's not like I want DeVoe to have a personal vendetta against Barry, but the conflict felt so much more urgent in the first half of the season, possibly because it also centered Barry more versus DeVoe. And so now, like, ever since Barry went to jail, it's just been like an excuse for Harry to go bonkers later trying to stop DeVoe. And on the flip side with this storyline, like, I agree with you guys that if it had just been, like, two scenes, it would have been much better. Like, the one scene where Cisco says he won't do it, and then the scene where Cisco agrees to do it. But I don't get why Cisco agrees to do it. Like, because he's right, you know? And I know that he's right, and the narrative knows that he's right. Yeah. But everyone else is telling him to do it, just because. Either way, it should have been in a different episode. It shouldn't have taken away from Iris Speedster time, basically. And another scene that could have gone and not taken away from Iris Speedster time was the useless Ralph Harry scene. At the very least, if you're going to keep the rest of the storyline, get rid of that scene. That scene added literally nothing. All it did was remind us that Ralph is useless.
Which was, we didn't need to know that.
Yes! Speaking of Ralph, his ugly, disrespectful ass also pissed me off this week. And it's not so much that I'm mad that he, you know,
said some lies about Iris because he did, but like I had said, I liked that everyone else disagreed and I liked that they all believed her, etc. So I don't really care what Ralph thinks, but I'm fucking tired of his regression. Like, I can't believe that he said he was going to step up at the end of 414, that he's going to help you with Boss Menace, and that he offered Barry a job. And now in 416, we found out he hasn't left the basement, so he hasn't even, there is no job for Barry to go to. Like, Barry doesn't even have a job still, because his boss didn't leave the basement. And he isn't helping anyone himself. And like you pointed out, he literally says that, yay, there's other people that's going to die before him. So that final scene in 414 shouldn't have even happened, because this is the complete opposite of what happened there. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand. Like, is that like a continuity error? Like, should that have been a deleted scene? I'm very confused. Whatever. What is the point of Ralph? He just needs to die already. I just need DeVoe to eat him. Okay. Also, like you guys, I would have preferred that Iris got a few more bits to, like, save the day, like Barry in season one did. Help people in small ways, eat 100 tacos, you know, vibrate on Barry. I'm just, whatever, just anything. Any small things like that. But I also would have preferred that her desire to get back out in the field be hinted at in previous episodes. Like, it would have been nice to see moments where she, like that moment when she was going to go out and help Caitlin and Cisco in 411, and then Ralph takes over, like, it would have been nice to see her be, like, maybe a little bit disappointed with that she wasn't going to do it. So that we then get here, instead of Ralph being the spark that lights the insecurity fire, which then leads to the new passion, it could have just been she decides on her own that she's going to go out, because she's already been feeling like she's too cooped up, etc. We didn't need Ralph for that. Other nitpicks include the writers or directors, someone just forgetting that Caitlin existed. Like, because Iris said the fire duty thing, and then Eric was just like, I don't really care about Caitlin, so I'm moving on from this. I'm not writing a scene in for this. And then, like, even if it's not in the script, you'd think that the director would be like, wait a second, shouldn't we take that line out, or shouldn't we put her in the scene? Like, no one thought about this. That is how little they think about Caitlin. Like, there's so many people that could have caught that. They just want to make Caitlin look stupid, I guess. I don't know. And I mean, then
it's not like it was wearing a Star Labs sweater was the thing that kept her in Star Labs, because, like, it was like Killer Frost, like, jacket in the cleaners or whatever. She changes clothes anyway, so yeah. Like, I don't know what about, like, Iris saying, I'll go, man. Caitlin was like, okay, I guess I'll stay here and not go help you put out a fire.
It was very strange. Very, very strange. Anyway, I really don't understand why we needed Harry's thinking cap for the tidal wave when Barry's regular brain should have been able to go up that. Like, I know why they did it, because they needed to show the thinking cap was useful, but it was not in that instance necessary. So, just dumb. I don't like it. And then, final point would be that I love Matthew Kim joining the team, but I wish he had specifically apologized to Iris for holding a scalpel to her throat. I know he apologized in general, but I would like a direct apology about the scalpel. Which, you know what, at least I got a direct apology from Ralph, so it's a start. Someone apologized to Iris about something. Yay.
But yeah, but you're completely right about the regression, because of my anger. He is regressing, because if we're going to keep, so every two episodes, he's going to have a moment where you're like, okay, my garbage son is, like, not so garbage for Jessica. And then, then he's going to be garbage again. Yeah. And then I can't keep going back and forth, like, pick a side, okay? You're either in the recycling or you're going to come back to life. I don't know. Just choose something that doesn't make you an asshole or leave. That's it.
Yeah. Just throw the whole Ralph away. Just, like, throw it out.
We need a new Ralph.
We need a new Ralph.
We need no more new white guys on the team.
That's true. We just need Matthew Kim.
One thing I didn't mention, that it's kind of like a nitpick, but it's about Matthew Kim. And it's like, I don't understand why whenever they bring in, because they did this with Izzy too, whenever they bring in a new group, no one's secret identity matters except for wearing a flat suit. And it's like, a little bit of digging. Oh, this Iris West Allen is married to a Barry Allen, and she's helping a superhero. So I wonder if that superhero is Barry Allen, or like anything like that. Like, why is it all these people with no coverage, you know, except for Barry, and then they invite them into the team, and then they find out it's Barry anyway.
It's okay. Yeah. For next episode, he'll reveal himself, and I'll have to take a shot. So I might as well just go buy my vodka now.
And then Matthew will die, so I won't even have that to do at all.
Well, what I thought was interesting is, well, what I would like is for Matthew to take away Ralph's powers so he can leave.
Thank you!
My dream.
Just take his away.
Is that your prediction?
I mean, he could ride, then DeVoe won't come after him. Just take his powers.
Right. And, like, you know, Ralph can stop being a little whiny bitch.
No, my prediction is that Harry could potentially leave Earth, and I don't mean by going back to Earth 2, I mean leaving as in dying.
you're just getting rid of everyone, aren't you?
No, I don't know. I'm feeling very morbid this week.
This bitch is gonna die.
Make him die.
Well, okay, so I don't want him to die. I do want him to be, I don't want him to be in every episode either, but here's why I think this is because he is so obsessed with taking down DeVoe. It's not because DeVoe happens to just be a bad guy. They've given him sort of a happy-ish ending with Jesse, you know? And then he's getting a fairly good amount of story this season, which I don't think he's really gotten, you know, before as much, except for Let's Save Jesse, and that's pretty much it in season two. So I feel like this is all going to lead down a path of either death or something else. Something's going to happen. That's all.
To him. I definitely agree with something is going to happen. I think he'll go a little cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs with a thinking cap. And I think that that's why Don made that face at him and Caitlin. I don't know what the end result will be of it, though. Like, I feel like because they love Tom Cavanaugh so much and Harry seems to be their favorite now, since this is the third season that Harry has shown up in, that he will, you know, be saved by the at the end of the day before it's too far. But if not, I guess he could be a villain for next season.
True.
Not that I want that. So yeah, it's a little bit. And yeah, like I said, Matthew Kim's gonna die. But I hope I continue to hold out hope that Ralph will get eaten instead, and Matthew will replace him on the team. And finally, we know that Clifford will be paying the mayor a visit coming up soon. Like, I thought that was going to be in this episode, but it's not. So I'm expecting it to happen next time when we come back on April 10th. And something's going to go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be Elvis again in crib predict that I read on Twitter. And it's by @CandyPattens. And she was talking to a friend on Tumblr. And she was saying that West Allen hasn't had a jitter scene this season yet, and maybe they're saving it for when they meet Dawn again. I was like, oh my god, that sounds like a good prediction, because she's met, like, everybody in jitters. So it would be, make sense. And jitters mean so much to Barry and Iris as a couple that it would make sense for them to meet her in jitters. And I was so afraid when Joe was in jitters that Don would come up to him, and I was like, no, we can't have any of that. Iris isn't there. But it didn't. I was saved. So so either it would have to be either Barry and Iris in jitters meeting Don, or Iris and Joe in jitters meeting Don, because Iris and Joe are the only two that haven't met Don yet.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
I mean, I want Barry and Iris, but I feel like since he already met her, it's going to be two new ones, and so it would be Iris and Joe.
Yeah. Please!
I like this prediction a lot.
All right, so who's our lady with gumption of side B? I think Caitlin was super supportive.
Cecile was said, like...
she's withholding the name of her child.
Right.
And sending Barry around the state to grab her pizza. Yep.
Oh my god.
and Marlise is probably plotting how to murder her ridiculous husband. So...
Iris, guys, is the lady with gumption.
Alright, so why is Iris the lady with gumption?
I think we just, like, talked about this in the entire... Like...
Yeah. You know why, Tati. You know why.
You know why, doggy. That, like, I just want to say that I love how this episode really gave her a chance to shine, but it didn't, like, change her character to it. Like, it's not like it's, like, a totally new
thing for Iris. Like, this is all the stuff that Iris has always been. And it reminds me of what Todd Helbing said in the interview that I really loved. And, like, it's the first time that I really felt like someone in that room, like, really understands Iris. Like, obviously they do because they write her. And where would it have come from if they didn't write her that way? But like, how he said that she's so selfless. She's always doing things for other people. She's always putting aside her own desires for everyone else. And that this is the first time that, you know, she's really allowed to look inward and sort of push for what she wants for herself. And I really love that.
And I feel like we are in the post AJK era right now. And this is a coincidence. I don't know. You can be the judge of that. I don't think it is. But it does feel like this is the first kind of, since season one, the first kind of shift for her into like a new like focus or character plot. Because a lot of, you know, we did get that a little bit with the journalism, and then it kind of tapered off in season one where they kept pushing her outside of the narrative. And this kind of felt like a really good, it was actually centered on her. I also think it's the first time, and I could be exaggerating, but I feel like it's the first time that she's had like a centered episode that ultimately came back around to still be centered around her and not her sharing her episode becoming about someone else, even though Harry tried his damnedest to take it over.
He tried to be
about Iris and poking and pushing her story forward. So I really like that. It does seem like for the first time in a long time that they are going to focus on her journalism, and hopefully that we get back that Iris and the Flash dynamic that was missing, I think, from season one, where they could have gone that route and had more of their partnership in the field, and they didn't. So hopefully we get that now.
I feel like this comes full circle, too, because in, I don't remember which episode it was in the third season, but it was, like, the first half, and she was talking to Barry about how, what she really does for the team or whatever, and he's like, well, without, you know, Iris, there's no Flash or whatever. And
now 306, like, 306. Yes.
So now it's, like, come back around where she's 100% involved, so she was, like, she's leading the team, she's back to going, you know, she's going back to becoming a journalist. And she had powers. She got to have all of those things. And it fed into more of her characterization and layered her even more. And I just love the fact that, I mean, there was just so much gumption because she didn't have to be convinced to go out into the field and help people. She didn't have to be talked into it at all. Like, oh my God, well, the puppies are going to die. Or, you know, if we don't stop these people, Ralph is going to die or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and even as scary as the first outing was, she did want to go back out there,
right,
again.
Exactly. It just speaks to her, like, selflessness and need to help the city, like Barry, but in, like, a different capacity. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed that. It's, like, a good parallel, and also that this is who she is, you know? And I've always loved that about her.
I forgot to say, I really love, and I wasn't expecting it, the fact that she goes back to her blog was a surprise to me, rather than going back, like, just getting her job back at CCPD, which she easily could have just shown him, like, oh, it's a CCPD WordPress website, you know? CCPN, sorry, CCPN WordPress website. It's too close. And I like that because it sort of makes me feel like she might be building towards Central City Citizen, you know? Mm-hmm, and we've never heard of Central City Citizen yet. So what if she starts it herself?
Ooh. Wait, because the newspaper articles for the Central City Citizen or Picture News?
The one from 2024 is Central City Citizen. Oh. So it's not Picture News. And so we've always been like, okay, well, she's going to, you know, switch jobs, but we still have yet to hear Central City Citizen. And now she's starting her own place. So it suggests to me, like, the idea of building her own brand, you know, and not just going to work for someone else.
I think that's great. I think it's a great prediction. And also for all the people that were hoping that she would go out and, like, stay out of Star Labs and not be seen anymore, if she's starting her own newspaper, she can still be.
Yep.
I love it. Yay, Iris, for being a true lady with gumption.
I don't know why that sounded so shady. Like, all the others were fakes.
I say shady things. This was not meant to be shady.
You're all ladies with gumption. But Iris was the most lady with the most gumption this week. That's the end. Thank you for listening to us. Next week, we're only going to have Legends and Black Lightning. And we may include some other fandom-related topics that we will analyze and process for your listening pleasure. Bye. Bye.